Hi, I'm Matt, and I can't even get my nut up to rumble for a podcast until I take a shot in the chin.
Hi, I'm Megan.
Yep, that's what you do. Anyway, welcome to a very special edition, Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2 on Horror Show Hot Dog. Hey everybody, we are, as we mentioned in the intro, talking about Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2 this week. We've had a bunch of unforeseen circumstances happen this week, so we've had to put off doing our regular episode until probably next week. Yeah, one of which would be, I got in a mad car accident this weekend, so I've been doing a bunch of shit, which has limited my time to do things. Everybody's fine, everything's okay, but expenses and insurance calls and fucking all that bullshit, so... between that and stuff, we've just not had a lot of time to do all the normal housekeeping stuff. Turns out that you can binge a season of Ash vs. Evil Dead in about 5 hours, so...
Yes, you can.
Megan and I can slap that together like no one's business. So that's what we're going to do instead. So, Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2. We did Season 1 not too long ago on one of these episodes. It's also still...
It could have been 2 seconds.
For all we know.
The other person.
Still streaming on Netflix, so if you have not seen it and don't want the most spoiler-heavy thing in the world, stop and go watch it and then come back. Or if you don't care, which is fine, listen. Anyway. So, we're going to do kind of the same thing. We'll do a little bit of a play-by-play of the season, kind of episode-by-episode as it goes, and talk about how it changes and grows. I think there's definitely some differences this season from the first that are worth noting. We have some different characterizations, some different character arcs, maybe, and we have an introduction of a new kind of big bad, which honestly, for me at least, gives this season a bit of a, at least to me with my limited experience, like Buffy vibe in some ways.
I would agree.
For
modern sensibilities, supernatural perhaps more so.
Sure, and see, I was, as Josh always makes fun of me, I watched a lot of Charmed, but I did not like Buffy.
Which makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, right? I don't know. But anyway, so that's the thing. So let's dive right into it. So season two picks up, we have a cold open, but the point is the season picks up with Ash's goal from season one being all he wants to do is go to Jacksonville. The city's so nice, they named it Jacksonville, which is his mecca, essentially, at the end of season one. And that's where we pick up is like a not very long later. It's not, I don't think it's explicitly stated.
I mean,
how long it's been.
No, but it couldn't have been too long.
I'm assuming it's not very long at all. No. But I don't think they give us a, like, 4 months later.
No, they don't do
anything. I don't think they do any.
Actually indicate. But I got the impression we're not talking, like, years.
Oh, I'm assuming we're talking a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a month. Because also, which fits the themes that Ash is not allowed to have happiness. Is kind of like his lament, and also it seems to be his truth, is like whenever he gets happy or finds someone he likes, it's taken away from him by the Deadites, and so I can't assume they had very long in Jacksonville to be parting it up. So episode one kind of, and I think you had said, Megan, you felt like episode one is the same tone as season one?
Yes.
Which episode, you think is jarring and different than
I think
season
the first,
two, maybe?
Yeah, the first episode, which you said, I mean, correctly, I think probably it acts as a bridge. Because the first episode of season two is still bonkers. It's very...
Really zany.
Very, yeah. Very Evil Dead, more almost Army of Darkness.
More, yeah, Evil Dead 2, like, Army of Darkness.
It's
yeah.
Definitely more bonkers. I mean, it starts off with Ash being... I essentially think his job is to be the party man at
a
bar.
He's the party captain.
And then...
Like, yeah.
Kelly and Pablo have the shit jobs trying to actually have jobs.
Yeah, he's like a busboy and she's like a bartender or a server.
They have
implied actual jobs.
Well, Kelly is miserable, it seems. Pablo is just happy because Ash is happy, basically.
Pablo just is happy to be near Ash, yeah.
So...
we should point out real quick, the cold open on this, though, is Rubian, we don't quite know, like maybe... Lucy Lawless's character in like a hospital maybe or something.
Yeah, fighting her children.
Yeah, she's fighting the now grown up versions of the demon kids we saw in the basement of the cabin at the end of last season. And she is actually clearly able to use the Necronomicon, which is the first time, I think, in any movie or show we've seen that happen, where a character can, like, swing it, and it the eyes on it glow red, and, like, things are whipped back by a force. Like,
I feel like she used it in the first season.
She conjured a lot of stuff. I don't think she had ever... Well, she used the face part for Pablo.
Yeah.
But I don't think she ever used it, like, as a weapon. Maybe. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed like that's the first one, and it's like, oh, and, like, that's an interesting line to draw that, like... She is adept with it. And until now, in all the movies and lore, you've only had idiots trying their best to kind of work around it or understand it.
Well, she says in the original season that she wrote it.
Yeah, but it's just cool to see her use it differently than anyone else because of that.
But she's also very clearly outnumbered. Like,
she's getting fucked up by her kids. And then you have a thing where she flips through and you see the quote-unquote hero Ash portrait that you see at the end of Evil Dead 2 in the Necronomicon, and it's just, like, the figure with the arm aloft with a chainsaw on it. And that's when we cut to Jacksonville, and you see, you know, Ash the Party King and everybody else. And they're in just some bar with a bunch of beach douches.
Yeah.
And partying and getting drunk.
Cans and
chainsawing kegs. I mean, he is truly having the experience he was hoping for
as
22-year-old Ash. And he's just doing it at like 50-year-old
Ash. And then it looks like she's going to murder everyone.
Yeah. And Pablo just looks like the happiest golden retriever you've ever seen, because that's what Pablo does most of the time. So that's pretty delightful. Then you get a sudden little bit of wind comes in, and there's clouds swirling, and it starts raining, which, of course, as fans of Evil Dead, we know that means deadites are coming. And a couple of mom and daughter that Ash is being gross to, that are hitting on him, and he's hitting on back in a very disgusting way, because that's who Ash is, turn into deadites, and one of them says, truce is over, Ashy Slashy, and then they have, like, a Nightmare on Elm Street-style rhyme, like, 1, 2, Ashy Slashy's coming for you type thing, which is weird, because, like, that, it invokes a mythos that we've not been privy to, and that plays out later in the season.
Yeah, but it's entirely new. To the show.
Yeah, it's a little, like, Ashy Slashy. It's like, okay, the deadites are dicks, and they tease you. And then you find out, like, oh, that's actually going to be a main plot point later in the series, but it's a good little tease for that. Tons of gore. Buckets of gore and guts and fluids.
It's
in this bar scene.
I wrote, bonkers opening with blood everywhere,
mm-hmm.
but it also has all, there's, once again, I think it's in that scene where we start getting Three Stooges jokes again, I think.
You have some of that splat stick that made Evil Dead 2 so good and Army of Darkness in its
And there's
moments.
A bunch more, like, the deadites are on point again with, like, all their, like, double entendres and, like, weird puns and stuff.
The Ash, of course, is pissed because the whole point of going to Jacksonville is there's a truce with Ruby, and the deadites say Ruby sent them, and so they're like, alright, we gotta find out what's up with the truce. How do we figure out where to go? And Ash says, well, if they knew Ashy Slashy, that can only mean Ruby is in Elk Grove, Michigan, which is, in this movie, or in this timeline, Ash's hometown. Depending on the various levels of fiction, Dearborn, Michigan has been Ash's hometown, at least in, like, the PlayStation 1 game. I don't remember if they say it specifically in the movies, but if you're a super nerd like me, that was like, oh, that's a slight change. Wonder why, but whatever. So they head back there to find out why the truce is off. Pablo does some weird automatic writing when he's in the back of the Delta that just, like, makes a portrait of, like, the Necronomicon.
I wrote down, Pablo, still the best face actor.
He really does. That guy emotes like a motherfucker.
Because it used to be, like, you used to say, like, well, and you still do, like, that Bruce Campbell is, like, amazing to act with his face, like, his expressions. Yes. But, like, that actor who plays Pablo is...
Yeah, well, I
could just watch him make every single expression ever. Like, he's amazing.
And Bruce is still really funny, but I think as he's aged, it's more limited.
Well,
he's got real big expression and then, like, squinty eye, but the subtlety isn't there as much.
He's also learned, like, what expressions are wanted from him now very much.
Yeah, he certainly knows how to play to his crowd.
Pablo seems like, I'm not saying they're not directing him to, but he seems like he's very, like, I mean, you told me that I speak with my face a lot. Like,
oh, for
sure. Looks like Pablo speaks with his face.
I would imagine he does it naturally. And then it's just magnified because he is so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, whenever he's on screen. And not to take anything away from the actress that portrays Kelly. I think she's great.
Yeah.
But she's not asked to be that.
No.
And she does a lot with just an eye roll or a bit of a glance. But Pablo, his whole face is involved in, like, every thought that pops in his character's
and that's,
head.
I think I wrote that in reference. Well, I wrote it in between my notes for other things, so it must have been when he was in the back seat, because I think he just expresses so much because he's just like, I don't know what I'm doing. What
he's
am I doing?
He's telling a whole story.
Oh, yeah. He's got, yeah. He like knows everything is wrong. And
he does that thing that you want where the actor is discovering the information as it's happening in the story, just like we are, just like he should be.
Yeah, like he never wrote
like
the script.
He never seems like he's a step ahead of us, and he's really, really good at that. So they pull into, Elk Grove, Michigan.
Yep.
Up in front of Ash's house, and some little kids that are, like, chucking rocks at this old house, which is apparently Ash is yelling about Ashy Slashy, and they're chucking rocks, and like, Ashy Slashy's gonna get you. And Ash enters his childhood home and meets his dad, played by Lee Majors, which is so fucking cool. And I could totally believe they're related.
Yeah.
They dress them similarly, which is creepy. But it's obvious.
Well, yeah.
But they don't put them in exactly the same clothes, so it takes a second to sink in that they both just wear very workmanlike, regular person clothes.
Ash's dad, upon the first, like, 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes, of them interacting, his name is Brock Williams, which is also amazing, that he is the more rapey and racist version of Ash Williams.
Yeah, Ash is actually the toned-down version of his dad. Brock is thoroughly unimpressed by Ash showing up. It's been 30 years, and he's just like, get out.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, cool. They decide to go into town to see if they can find Ruby. A weird homeless guy stops the gang outside the bar and says Ash ruined his life, and Ash is like, yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah.
And they enter the bar, and the entire bar goes quiet. And then, except for the waitress, who recognizes Ash, Linda, the waitress.
Yes.
Same name as Ash's girlfriend from Evil Dead, which is a little weird. And she's like, really nice to him, and then her husband, the sheriff, also obviously comes up and starts talking to him and recognizes him, and the whole bar eventually starts chanting Ashy Slashy, which we still don't quite get. Ash gives a sweet speech, tell them all to fuck off, and how they're looking for someone, and if they don't find him, the whole thing will go down horribly. And that's where we kind of pick up that, oh, right, in the real world, the people that would have been in Ash's hometown, Ash and his sister and a couple friends went to a cabin. All of them disappeared and were murdered except him. Of course you think Ash killed those people. Of course you'd think he's, if not a serial killer, or a spree killer. And, like, there, I guess, would not have been the right kind of evidence in this reality to convict him, although there totally would have been, but maybe the bodies weren't there, except that we find the skull of Linda in the thing. Well, I mean, when he goes back, but you never know, right?
Yeah,
and that's the thing, is I always kind of wonder, if you went to that cabin, is there just nothing there?
Yeah.
And Ash tells you this wild story. And you go, well, clearly he must have killed them or he's crazy or whatever, except that they could have also just packed up and left. So I guess you're left with no evidence.
Yeah.
So who knows? But everybody would assume that's what happened. And so that's the reality of it. Ash is the local boogeyman, which I thought was really interesting because that, again, like I said, they sort of teased in season one, that tries to make your Bugs Bunny character fit into the real world somewhere, tries to ground the complete insanity of these movies, which are always completely cut off from civilization, in how would the average Joe react. Not that the reactions of everybody in these movies are realistic, or these shows for that matter are realistic based on how we'll go through the rest of this season, but it's an interesting idea.
I'd like to add, while we're still in the bar, I wrote down that the bar has the best extras cast in anything ever. He walks into the bar and it looks like a small town bar in Michigan. Like, it is not full of beautiful people. It is not full of average. It is full of every type of person imaginable. Like, yeah,
that could be Arnie's and Shakopee where I grew up. It could
everyone
be
dressed
any
anywhere from, like, yuppie to working class, all ages, everyone, like.
Oh, that's right. Because my only complaint was the only thing they get wrong is that everyone's clothes are brand new.
Yeah.
Nothing's worn in, but I assume that's the thing of, like, you're renting these costumes.
Yeah.
They can't be destroyed.
But it was just nice to see just, like, a thing that clearly looked like they were just like, we want people.
Yep.
Not like bit actors trying to get their big break who's gonna, like, they're just, I mean, I'm sure they are actors, but they just look like people.
But yeah, it reminds me of, like, the bar at It's Always Sunny. We'll have, like, four dudes in their 20s, a couple weird old vets.
Yeah.
You know, just that weird shit. If you go to a bar in the middle of the day, it's gonna be a strange mix. If you go to a bar in a small town that maybe only has one bar, everyone's there, regardless of if they'd hang out otherwise, you know?
And then I wrote a quote, but I don't remember when it comes in, so I'm gonna say it now.
Do it.
I wrote the boomstick butcher with the chainsaw hand. I think he calls himself that. But is it still at the bar?
It is at the bar. I think that's during his speech where he's like, all right, yada, yada, yada. You know, you could call me Ashy Slashy. That's right. I'm the boomstick butcher with a chainsaw hand. I think that's what it is. Dear Internet, I'm sure you'll correct us. So, meanwhile, Kelly and Pablo are out also looking for Ruby in the streets. Pablo just sees a person levitating in an alley, then goes around a corner, so he follows that. And he has a weird vision of Ruby standing in front of, like, a big industrial-type building. And then he rips his own face off.
I wrote best like, next to that.
It looks so good.
It's amazing for a TV show.
He just, like, grabs his face and starts yanking the skin off, and then the muscle, and then, like, his eyes are there, and he's crumbling the everything. It's just, it's all practical as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it looks
like
it.
Or at least composited insanely well.
Yeah.
I believe it's probably all practical, because most of this show is very practical.
I feel like, especially compared to the first season, the first episode of the first season was also very practical heavy, and I wonder if they kind of bookend the show with the more practical heavy.
And I think aside
heavy,
from, like, the demons, most of it stays practical. There's definitely some things where you can tell, like the car when we get
to
that.
Yeah,
has to be, but
other blood spots, like
the occasional blood
spot. Yeah.
But, like, the monster effects and stuff tend to be very much in the room, and I think they look all the better for it, which is pretty cool.
Agreed.
So the gang kind of follows Pablo's, what they figure is, like, a weird vision to the crematorium, which is what they decide the building that the vision of Ruby was standing in front
of. In this small town, Michigan, it is the crematorium the size of, like,
a football field, and, like, multiple stories tall.
It's just, like, it's a high school, basically. Like, what is even going on?
Maybe all the bodies for, like, the state go there?
Everywhere.
That is not how crematoriums work, but whatever. So the gang goes to the crematorium. Ash kind of has to fight his shadow in a really great, another Three Stooges type scene, where he's, you know, in a basement that's full of just pipes on the ceiling and shit, and he sees his shadow and he, like, waves his left hand, and the shadow waves its left hand, but when he turns away, the shadow, like, smacks him on the back of the head, and when he turns back, he raises his right hand, and the shadow raises its left hand, and he looks at his right hand, and the shadow goes, whoop, and switches to do what he's doing. And he has a moment where he wangs his head, like, on four different pipes.
Everything.
Then he one just cracks open, and, like, big of soot goes all over his face, and he just goes, my goodness. It's like the most restrained, not quite expletive, that is, like, I laughed my ass off watching that. It's fucking brilliant. Anyway, Kelly gets pulled into, like, a weird sewer of some kind by a shadow. Pablo's confronted by a spider-walking Ruby spawn. Looks very much like when Styles in the Mouth of Madness comes out from behind the door of the car, so her head's facing normal direction, but her body's doing a back bend.
Yeah.
So it's twisted upside down, and it looks
creepy.
Which
is the most unnerving thing. And a lot of horror movies have done that.
Yeah,
but
I mean, ever since they cut that scene from The Exorcist with the spider, although Regan's head wasn't flipped around during that. But they, it's an idea that's really, it's wrong. Your brain screams that can't
be. And this show does a really interesting job of showing it unwind.
Which is fascinating.
Because it made me almost wonder, like, I know obviously someone cannot actually have their head, but it made me wonder how much they captured from an actual person moving from just a back bend, like just a walk.
I'm wondering if just some, like, Cirque performer got $100 to come in and do that once.
Yeah, because it looked like someone naturally unwinding from that position.
The rest of it all looked very doable. All the body stuff looked fine. It would just be the head you'd have to do in post, because it's so fluid and creepy.
And that's why I thought it had been, like, captured from an actual human.
I think it probably was. I decided just to call the monsters Ruby Spawn, just to make it easier in my notes.
Babies.
Babies. So, it seems like Pablo, when he is confronted by one that gets all up in his grill, he's spared because he's still got the Brujo's medallion around his neck. That seems to kind of ward it off, and it sort of sniffs around him and then runs away. Kelly, meanwhile, has to fight herself in a sewery thing that kind of looks like the thing in the beginning of Army of Darkness, where Ash is fighting that monster in the weird pit. So she's got, like, a dark version of Kelly fighting her and telling her that she doesn't need Ash.
She's stronger than him.
Yep.
I wrote down Kelly in sewer. She makes a Die Hard reference.
Mm-hmm.
She makes the walls bleed again, which they did in season one.
She shoots the walls and then creates.
And it looks like the trash compactor scene from Star Wars.
Yeah. So she ends up shooting the walls, which then creates blood geysers, which then starts flooding the small room she's in. Ash does find Ruby, and she says her children have turned on her, and she wants Ash's help. Kelly is nearly ready to drown, but Pablo saves her. Meanwhile, Ruby is now getting her ass beat by, like, three of her bebes, and Ash kind of has a little moral crisis and decides to step in and help her. Turns out, though, his chainsaw totally ineffective in killing these things. But the Kandarian dagger works when Ruby stabs one. Ash agrees to help Ruby defeat her spawn as long as then they can go back to Jacksonville and go back to being quote-unquote happy as far as what Ash considers happy. That's the end of episode one. So, episode two. We open on Brock, Ash's dad, getting ready for a date, and Ash and the gang return with Ruby, which, this is the first time I noticed this, because it's a well-known thing that, like, in the Evil Dead mythos, between one scene and the next, you're magically clean, or at least mostly clean. You'll still have a little bit of blood on your face, maybe, or you'll show, like, the resultant cut or scar.
Yeah, he always has, like, shaving cuts on, like, Bruce Campbell always has shaving cuts on his face, like, looks like.
But your clothes are just magically clean and dry, maybe a little bit worse for wear from scene to scene. And sure enough, they were in there. Kelly was completely submerged in blood. You know, Bruce is covered in, like, this black ichor that comes out of all the babies. And, you know, Pablo, I'm sure, had something on him. Everybody always ends up with something on him. And then Ruby's gotten stabbed in the side and beaten up. And you get back to Ash's house. They're all pristine, but showing the damage on their faces, except Ruby, who's still completely blood-splattered and gross. And I'm wondering if that is a nod to her being the outsider to the group in some way, shape, or form, or what the deal... That can't be an unintentional choice. You don't lay out fresh costumes for everybody, except for one, and then when you get called to set, you go, oops, fuck it. Like, that just seems like too big of a thing to not have it be a conscious choice. I'd love to find out what the thought was behind that. Because it's not like they change clothes. They're wearing the identical clothing. And these characters do change clothes from episode to episode. So they're wearing the same t-shirt that says, you know, fuck the clock on Kelly's, that she's wearing as she's getting douched with blood. So it's not like they change into other clothes we've seen them wear or just different clothes. They're wearing the identical shirts. So there's got to be a point to be made there. If you have an idea, dear listeners, please let us know, because I can't quite get it, except for maybe that Ruby is the outsider. And maybe the fact that as she got damaged by her kids, which we pretty quickly in this episode find out means she's no longer immortal, maybe that has something to do with it. She doesn't regenerate the same. And we do realize, you know, based on the mythos from, like, the Brujo and Ruby in the previous season, part of what makes Ash able to do all the things Ash does is he's the chosen one. But without the book, he'd stop being special. So maybe that's part of his thing, is he kind of comes out gleaming and looking good because he's the special one. He's the jefe, you know?
But then that wouldn't explain Pablo and Kelly.
Unless they're part of, like, the, you know, Knights of the Round Table behind Arthur. I guess. You know what I mean? I don't know, but, like, it's interesting. I just wonder what the thought process is. I would absolutely, you know, love to hear someone else
that's a making involved, of or behind it. The scenes. Yeah,
because I just, all I have is my guesses, which are just that, guesses. So anyway, they head upstairs because no one wants to watch Brock have a date. Ash, when they head upstairs, Ash gets flashbacks from the original Evil Dead as he walks to the top of the hall and sees Cheryl, his sister's room, who died in the first movie. And it plays scenes from Evil Dead on her door as they're kind of in there. He has a bit of a flashback LSD moment, as they call it, which, again, I still think is a really cool, effective way to kind of...
Yeah, because they did it off the boxes and...
In the first episode, the pilot.
Yeah, but then they did it again off of something else.
They did it a couple times.
Yeah.
They do it a couple more times in this season, too, which I love that effect. Ash's room, I think, looks pretty much like you'd expect, which is to say, awesome. It is the most 1982... 20-year-olds.
And it appears he has a twin waterbed.
We forgot to Google, but do they make those?
I don't. It looked like a twin waterbed.
By the time you hear this, we'll have had a chance to Google it, but I bet we won't have.
Yeah.
But it just is. It took us till the second viewing here to notice it.
I guess it could just be a really weird framed bed.
But that's weird. You don't got to put your mattress in a bucket, y'all. Your mattress is just a mattress.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyways, you know. I noticed it, and it was weird.
Yeah, it is strange. So they start asking Ruby what the fuck is up. And so she doesn't have the Necronomicon, but she tells them they need it, and they ask her where it is, of course. And she says she put it inside a corpse, which is at the morgue. Apparently the dead body hides the smell of the Necronomicon, making it harder for her children to find it. Cut to the morgue, and you have morgue attendant guy doing autopsy, listening to Fat Beats on his, I'm going to say Walkman.
It looked like a Walkman.
It really did. The headphones.
The headphones
like
were those
style.
Old foamy metal looking things that were horrible.
I very much had in like the late 80s, early 90s.
And also, this was the first morgue attendant or coroner in any TV show ever to not be eating
Which
in a scene.
Which was so nice.
The first one. The first one. I'm wrong, but I'm going to say he's the first one.
But yeah, he's going about his business and he's just listening to music and doing his job. But he doesn't have to be shown eating while he's sawing off someone's skull.
And he's not fucking around at anything.
No, he's just...
Because, I mean, if they're not eating, then somehow they're fucking around with something else.
Yeah, oh, they're, like, being a creep, or they're, like,
yeah, he's just literally just, like,
doing his thing.
Cutting, weighing, stitching, just being a human.
Seems very competent workman-like. Yeah, just doing his job, which is another way to illustrate that this isn't freaking him out, it's just his job.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to eat a sandwich, you can just show him doing his job and we'll get that he does his job.
Yeah.
Like, take note, filmmakers. So, because of that, he doesn't notice a corpse crawling out of the drawers behind him and supplies goddamn Achilles trauma, which, as we all know, I love. And by love, I mean it's one of the few things that still kind of squicks me out and makes me cringe. Achilles trauma, fingernails being broken when people are, like, trying to grab something and one snaps off. Like, those give me
shivers.
Yeah, teeth.
I have mine.
Yep. So, it's done fine, but it's nowhere near as bad as, like, the pencil in Evil Dead. But I hate that shit.
But it's a nice scene because it doesn't show us anything, really. Like, you know, someone's creeping out, but you don't know who or what or...
So, the team decides Ash and Kelly are going to go for the book. Pablo says he's going to stay back and kind of interrogate Ruby about what the fuck's going on. And he's got the Kandarian dagger, so he's got the one up on her. Plus, she's weakened from being stabbed by her kids. So, he's like, I'm going to be all thugged out and do that. Which is when we learn Pablo's a big vagina, because he's very strong.
Yeah. Powerful vagina. Which he is Kelly's powerful vagina.
It's a runner for a few episodes.
It's very funny.
Kelly's like, where's my big, powerful vagina? It's pretty great. Ash sees that his dad's date is his former gym teacher that apparently Ash banged at some point. And he's like, oh, she's showing up to see me. Oh, she's showing up for my dad. God damn. He goes, not again. And Kelly's like, I'm sorry, again? He goes, we will not speak this or whatever. And they take off. So
is this also during this? It's during this car scene that I wrote down that Kelly at one point threats that I will shoot both of us, me first.
Yeah, I will shoot both of us in the head, starting with me or something like that. Yeah,
which is the best thing ever.
She's really funny in this season. She's still the sarcastic one that is like really annoyed at anything that is not just consummate lethality. But she is very funny in her annoyance this season. I really like her. She's never zany, but she's really funny. Ash and Kelly get to the morgue, and Ash starts just chainsawing bodies open to look for the book. And, of course, the very last one he gets to is, like, barely stitched shut with a huge rectangular bulge on the chest. And he's like, of course, look first, saw later.
Yeah, so it wasn't issues, but it is, that whole scene was very, because I actually noted earlier that there are two points in this season already where Ash is showing that like his softer side. Because like the first episode when they even get to his dad's house, he like has that moment where he just lives the whole
brace himself before he goes in.
Yeah, he's emotionally preparing himself. It's not like he's preparing himself to snark. I mean, he does because that's how he deals with stuff. Yeah. But
he's also not preparing himself for battle.
It's an emotional response. And then the second thing is when he sees Cheryl's room, he has a legit emotional response again.
He is legitimately fucked up about Cheryl.
And so that was the second thing. So I put that this is like this weird, just even when he agrees to help Ruby, he's like having these weird emotional like things where he's doing not selfish things.
Yeah. And
things
see
that are not going to even necessarily help him in the long run. Cause like helping Ruby, he just wants it to get back to normal. He's not even asking for like favors or this time he's just trying to get back to normal. So the thing that I thought was interesting that they tried to then correct back to sort of remind Ash that he's gross is they made him the first body that he pulled down, like make him be like, oh, that's a shame about like the pretty girl and that he has to like ruin her boobs and stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, I mean, I get that you're correcting to make sure we realize that Ash is still Ash, but it was like really weird because
you see the mask sometimes this season.
Yeah. But it was interesting that he like, it just, because up till then the season, which I know is only what, an episode and a half in, he had been like almost not a monster, and then they're like, "Oh wait, just kidding, guys. He's still a monster."
Yeah, I mean, he's still not an angel, but yeah.
But it was interesting just because he's
making choices that indicate differently. So meanwhile, as Ash is doing all this, Kelly tries to go get a soda, and I do love that she's like, ugh, I'm gonna get a pop. And it's like, yes, you all are from Michigan, you're in the Midwest, you would say pop like children, which I, from the Midwest myself, grew up saying pop. I hate it. I think we sound like idiots. So, I, you know, at like 18, 19, 20, something like that, I told myself, stop sounding like a goddamn child and say soda. And that's why I say that. But it's really indicative to me as one of those little details where if a screenwriter...
I still say pop.
Most people, my family does, like most people do. It drives me nuts. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard. But it is a little screenwriter detail of like the locality of those things. If you're in the South, they should say a Coke, you know?
Yeah.
And they get it. And that's really neat. You know, I was talking to a playwright friend of mine, and she's like, a buddy of hers wrote a thing that's supposed to be in like any town USA. And she's like, you say hot dish and pop three times in your play. You are not in any town USA. You are in the Midwest. And he's like, what do you mean? And she's like, you do some reading, you know, like, so they got that, which I really appreciate as someone, especially because that's like a little thing that drives me insane. Anyway. So she's trying to get a soda and the elevator starts acting funny. It just keeps opening and closing. There's no one there. And it's like, meh. But then the sheriff, who clearly hates Ash based on the bar encounter earlier, shows up. Ash, meanwhile, has to start fighting the corpse that he's just pulled the book out of because its small intestine, like, grabs him. Fight, fight, fight. It's got, like, the end of the small intestine ends up looking like a lamprey, which is pretty cool and gross. The big part here, without we shouldn't even dance around it, is that the intestine pulls Ash up through the...
No, you forgot the good quote.
Oh, what's the good quote?
Why can't I remember? I wrote it down so fast, I can't remember now his last name.
Who?
What the Harry...
Harryhausen.
Housen.
Yeah. At some point the intestines are attacking. He goes, what the Harryhausen? Which is a really funny. Good stop motion joke. But the intestines pull Ash up through the butt.
Not up the butt.
And he's like, not up the butt, not up
That's
the butt.
Just what he's, and he screams, I'm in the butt.
And then once he's in there, I'm in the butt, I'm in the butt. So you have a chunk of this, which again, this is a very Three Stooges chunk at the beginning of this season, where you have Ash with an entire corpse on his shoulders. So like, it's like, you know, when you have someone, like when you're chicken fighting in a pool. And except he's actually in the butthole with his head in the torso, which is open so he can see out because it's been dissected with a huge dong with a piercing at the end. It's got a huge Prince Albert.
His chin is a penis.
His chin is the pubes with a huge dick coming out of with a pierced fucking tip. And then he's covered in shit from getting pulled up through the ass. Mm-hmm. And he's running around with his whole corpse on him, falling over and knocking shit down and whatever. And it's... disgusting. It is so fucking gross.
He's like, because he just is just shouting like, I'm in the butt. I don't want to be in the butt. I'm in the butt.
It's fucking great. And so he's just slapped because, you know, you can't just solve a problem simply if you're Ash. You have to flail about for 10 minutes first. So that's delightful. He eventually defeats it and then in defeating it realizes that the open drawer we saw earlier with the mortician is his high school gym coach, the woman he saw going on a date with his dad not an hour ago. This isn't good. Cha-chung, dung-dung. So, cut to, Ruby is now actually turned the table and is grilling Pablo on about if anything weird has happened to him based on having had the book on his face in season one and what type of effects it might be having. And turns out Pablo's having visions and premonitions, perhaps more importantly, which she is super into, and she wants to use that to do some shit. Pablo's premonitions all appear to be that Ruby's going to kill him.
Yep.
Which Pablo is understandably not excited about. Ash and Kelly run back to Ash's house to try to save Pablo and pause at one point in the street because they almost run over a couple of pedestrians that are just total bros. And they have a exchange, yada, 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 make fun of each other.
Where they just have to, like, Pablo
the
kill
the car smells like actual shit, and Ash is like, surprise, not the car, it's all me, baby. And you're like, what?
Yeah, and then Kelly and him flip them off. Like,
and then they flip them off,
they won somehow.
We told them. Which is funny, because, I mean, that is one of those things that sort of shows why Kelly is still there, is because, like, on some level, she does still have fun with Ash.
Yeah.
Like, she's disgusted by most of what he does, but at the same time, when it's time to, like, talk shit... she enjoys doing that. And so, like, he's definitely good at talking shit. They head back, and they're heading back to the house. Now, Ruby and Pablo end up fighting Coach Deadite, which Ruby actually slays in this one. It's like a ward or something she pulls off a shelf.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be.
She ends up, like, lopping its head off, basically. And Ruby realizes, based on all the things that have happened now, that her spawn are going to try to summon Ball, which is her, I don't know if you say husband exactly, like her mate, the person with whom she created all these spawn.
Baby daddy?
Basically, yeah. And so she's like, where's the fucking book? Did you fail? And they're like, no, we got the book. We're going to bring it in here with a deadite in the house. It's in the Delta. Cue tires screeching and bros whooping as they steal the Delta and drive off.
Yeah.
End of episode two. So we've got kind of like, you know, the first one was like a road movie of trying to figure out like where to go and what to do and eventually culminating in the cabin. This series, though, it seems like every 2 to 3 episodes, there's a new MacGuffin.
This is a video game.
Yeah, very much. That is absolutely admirable. Which, again, is I think why it felt very Buffy to me, is it's like you have...
Go to here, retrieve this.
Go here and do this, or you have like you have a big bad that you're going to defeat. And yep. You know, and so it's just like it becomes... I think the ensemble aspect of it broadens a little bit. Pablo and Kelly, I think, are fleshed out in some different ways. And there are certain things about them that are only alluded to that I think could pay off in season 3, which starts at the end of like February. But and then you also have Ruby suddenly becomes a major player this season as opposed to an antagonist that shows up at the end of the season and it's just kind of trailing them in the first. So
I have to read my note about this was apparent in the first season. I don't remember if I mentioned it. I probably did. I'm just repeating myself.
Mm-hmm.
The blood on clothing in this show still looks like nail polish. It looks like someone just took a bottle of nail polish and poured it all over their clothes.
It is
and the poop. When Ash is later in the shirt that he has poop all over, it looks like weird, sparkly brown nail polish.
The weird thing is like no matter what the liquid was when it started, once it's like had half of a scene to dry, it is very discreet daubs and circles and stuff. Like you took nail polish on a paintbrush and just kind of flicked it at whatever the surface
is. And I know that they're trying to make it look wet-ish, but it looks shiny.
But wet would be runny.
Yeah.
But it always stays perfectly, you know.
Like a lacquer.
For an entire, you know, show or couple shows sometimes. And it's just like, it's a weird mix of what they're trying to do.
And I'm not exactly complaining, but it is for me very noticeable.
Well, it's jarring because it is in no way behaves like a liquid.
Yeah.
Like that's just not what liquids
do. Or poop.
Or poop, for that matter. So episode 3, we get a montage that we open on of Ash and the Delta, his true love, who has now been stolen, which consists of some footage from the original Evil Dead, as well as some more recent stuff, and then just some photos of it and things that they've kind of added in or whatever. So he's very obviously sad. And then you cut to the bros that stole the Delta with their friends and their girls, just getting high in the Delta with a weird bong made of a soda bottle.
A bong that cannot exist.
That both Megan and I were like, there's no choke on that. Well, I don't
my thing was they
the
never lit it.
Coming in. They're not actually using a lighter to get it. Like, we were just like, the impracticalities of this thing are just...
Everything was just
wrong. And like, I'm not like, you know, John Q420, but like, I just was like, the practicalities just don't seem to work to me. But whatever. It looks neat. It's a really cool, like, wouldn't that be a cool way to do drugs? And it's like, yes, you know, guy who's never done drugs, that would be a cool way to do drugs. Unfortunately, you would be not doing drugs.
Yes, guy who took 2 pots. That's exactly how you do the pot.
How much pots? 2? 2 pots?
1 crack? I just think we
just need
1
like
crack.
We can just split one. One crack for the table?
Yeah.
And also, of the kids doing drugs in the thing, one is the sheriff's daughter. Which, as we know...
Lacey.
And the sheriff hates Ash. So, Chicky in the back seat is like, ooh, what's this? She's the one that's been making out with her boy. And, you know, the rest of the group fucks off. She sees the book and starts reading from it. And the unseen force pops up, and she's a deadite, and bites the dude's dick off, which everyone saw coming.
Well, except the dude.
Except that dude. Which is fine. I'm totally great with dick trauma. I think that's always really good in a movie. I was surprised that Duder lasts for a long time running around with bloody boxers, because like, you bleed out pretty quick, because that's right next to like some major
arteries
on the thigh. But he does just... a great job being freaked out after that and like alerting the group to the severity of their situation. So Ash has a plan to figure out where his car is. He goes to get his bartender buddy Chet, played by the inimitable Ted Raimi.
Oh, wait, I have to say, I might have a note of, once again, you talking about how everyone has clean clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, everyone has clean new clothes on.
Well, they've changed clothes since, because they had their adventure. Everything was gross except clean. And now they have to change clothes because they were so gross, despite them being clean before they go out for the night.
So now everyone has new clothes.
Because basically everyone changes clothes every episode.
Yeah.
regardless of if it's the same
So my note was, where does everyone get their clothes? Mostly so, Ruby. Where's she getting her clothes?
Ruby, I don't understand, because they don't have her car
with
them.
Nope, she doesn't have her car.
Pablo and Kelly...
They didn't leave with anything.
Leave with anything.
And they also have no job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're all constantly broke, which makes sense, except that they somehow still managed to keep going.
Like, I'm not, like,
they could have bought shit
arguing.
While they were in... Because at this point, they were in Jacksonville, and they had jobs.
That's true.
So they could have bought some clothes and have a little space in a trunk in the trailer, because they're all theoretically living in the trailer, even in Jacksonville. So, like, I guess they could have built up a wardrobe, but it was the same issue in season one.
Yeah.
When they were changing clothes and stuff.
I think this one was just jarring because Ruby all of a sudden has a super stylish, which is an amazing looking outfit.
Is that when she puts her hair up this season too?
Yeah, and she has the red and white shirt that looks like she's almost wearing like a suit jacket.
She looks badass, yeah.
But it's like, where's Ruby getting all
this? Lucy Lawless still, you know, I mean, obviously she was Xena. Still just has a great look of, I'm going to whoop you.
Yeah.
Whenever
she
needs
it. Oh, and
also
this season
she
has pink hair?
Yeah.
She's pink and black hair, which this is, upon my second viewing, I like it now. My first viewing, I was not 100% on board with it.
Oh, really?
But I am more on board with it. She looks like Neapolitan ice cream, kind of.
A little bit, perhaps, yeah. I was thinking more like Psylocke or something, but, you know.
I want to make her look like candy.
Candy's good.
Okay, she looks like cherries and chocolate.
Fair. So anyway, Chet, the bartender, played by Ted Raimi, Ash's old buddy, the only person in town apparently that still likes him, aside from Linda, the waitress, they decide they will make Pink Fucks, which is a drink that the two of them used to make at parties, and they'd throw these mad raging keggers, and Chet gives you the recipe to a Pink Fuck, which is a bunch of different boozes, and then, oh, you just dump in a bunch of ketamine. So...
Which apparently is the least controlled substance in this small town.
He has
town.
A big old
he
stack
has a big
of it.
Bag yeah,
like,
of it.
I woof, it's a lot. So their plan is to throw a party with that because they never fail to be huge. And then the Bros of the Delta will obviously show up, which means they'll get the book back. And great, that's the plan. And Ruby's like, there are worse plans. Like, all right. So meanwhile, the Delta has just turned into Christine. So after Deadette Gal bit off dude's dick, the actual car itself has, like, flames coming out from the undercarriage.
And sucks Lacey back in.
Yeah, Lacey gets pulled back in. I forget exactly how.
The other guy tries, some guy tries to help her. He gets his fingers cut off.
But she wouldn't have been in there because they all exit so that
she gets back in, I think,
alone.
To, like, look at something.
Oh, they get in to examine because they find all the blood, yeah. So the car with just Lacey in it, now the sheriff's daughter. It's just running people down, chasing after them, and it's very clearly
evil. Oh, it's not
evil.
Running people down. Because I wrote down, Christine Carr does not just run people over. Because the first death is it literally makes its hubcap pop off its wheel then throws its hubcap at someone to kill them.
Frisbees it through someone's chest. Which, again, looks really good.
It is.
It's really cool.
But the car does not simply want to run you over.
That's true. The car wants to make you sad. I did write hubcap through chest. Yeah. In the margins here, I did write, there is great gore in this series in general. Like, up your game, movies. Like, this is a TV show. Admittedly, it's on Starz, so it's like a premium station, so the budget's probably a little higher. Starz is not the premium of the premium stations. For the budgets this show must have, compared to even a low-end horror movie that hits theaters at this point, you're probably still looking at $20 to $30 million, and things look like shit. Like, and I get it, you're probably spending a lot of that money on, you know, movies cost more to make, there's bigger crews, bigger sets, yada, 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 and you're probably trying to pay at least one or two big stars.
Yeah.
But for Christ's sake, for what must just be like a couple $100,000, these people are pulling off miracles. And again, a lot of it seems practical. Like, you could make a lot, I'm just thinking of all the horror movies we see that are done on a small budget, and all the effects look like garbage. And it's like, you clearly throwing a ton of money at it doesn't necessarily solve the problem. Caring about it seems to solve a lot of that problem. And, you know, making sure there's just the minimum amount of money and time to get it done. Because holy shit, these things look really great for the most part.
There is something to be said, though, that the people you could probably get away with paying some people less to work on this series because it could be considered so beloved to certain people.
Maybe, yeah.
Then
we don't know that, but like,
Saying there is always, you do have that is a benefit of being an established brand that is loved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Ben Affleck works for Scale when he works for Kevin Smith.
And that's the thing, like
that is a thing.
There are certain people that would do that more so out of love for, like, I bet I wouldn't be surprised if some actors who worked in this, I mean, I guess there isn't any, like, big name cameos, but Unless some like lead majors, like, let's
Duda
say like
needs the work, yeah.
But like, I could see them getting like a big name actor on a really either for free or like a really cheap amount just because they love Ash so much. Just
well,
like,
it's like when you watch G.I. Joe, like the new one. As much as like that's a weird movie to bring up, and like Brendan Fraser's in it for 8 seconds, I go, I bet he just wanted to do that because he liked G.I. Joe as a kid. Like,
well, that's
I can
like,
see that.
What was the other thing? Oh, the Lego movie we were talking about. The Lego movie and. Oh, Lego Movie and the new Han Solo pick.
I know, I hate trying to explain that.
I was looking at, this is a fucking tangent, whatever. I was looking
on
at
this show? The hell you say?
I was looking at some of like the cameos that were for that and from the Lego, because it was originally supposed to be the Lego Movie production crew, the directors and everything were supposed to be, or had worked on it. And there were all these other cameos that you can assume that they were from the Lego Movie, so they probably worked with them just because they wanted to.
Yeah.
And I think the same probably works for a lot of special effects. People, like, they know that on Ash, that's the other thing, on Ash, they'd probably be able to get away with stuff or try new crazy things that maybe, like...
I would imagine that would be very attractive.
I just think it, knowing that the creative team is probably a little bit handpicked at some point, because it sounds like from what we knew about the backstory, like, they got to kind of make this show how they wanted to. That was like part of their deal with working with stars.
From Bruce Campbell's interview on the Nerdist, the most recent one, just from a few months back, he did say that like part of the deal was like, okay, you can do as gory as you want, you know, like just no reins on it at all. And so they do some very creative stuff with it, which if you're a special effects house, the fact that you're not going to be told, we've got to tone it down to get that PG-13 we're looking for means, oh, the chance to go hog
and
wild
I don't,
on
like,
this
is an assumption. This is obviously
this is
very assumption. But, like, I could see people maybe willing to work for a little bit less because they get to do the fun stuff that even an independent horror movie might not do because they're going to want to stay as whatever's going to make them the most money, where this was going, like, we really don't care about money. We want to be true to the show.
Yeah. It could be. I don't know. Again, if you know more than we do, which is probably true, tell us. So... they're waiting for the bros to show up. Hubcap through the chest. Oh, yeah. So, meanwhile, now that everybody's got a few pink fucks, Ash starts asking around the bar, playing, like, awkward bar games, seeing if anybody knows anything about the Delta. Chet, the bartender, reveals all too much about his time in the service. And Kelly gives Pablo a pep talk, because he's not sure, like, what to do. He's always scared and whatever. She seems so strong and confident, and Pablo ends up giving Kelly an accidental anti-pep talk and making her just feel like, oh, cool, I guess I'm just this fuck-off that's fine alone. Cut back to the car, running down one of the dudes.
Well, I think, can I speak?
Sure.
Because I wrote that down, his anti-pep talk. I wrote down that it was interesting because she keeps becoming more like Ash, and it keeps being implied that she wants to become, or she's going to become little baby Ash, or like...
the successor.
Yeah, Ash Jr., but I think when he says that, that's when she realizes that she's losing herself and that
she's on the path
that is not what she wants. That she, because at the moment she mentions her family and how important family is and like that she likes the idea of having a home. Like, I think that's when she realizes that she's on this path that she didn't really pick for herself, which makes it all those times when other Kelly tells her that she's special and doesn't need Ash and everything. And then Ruby, over several episodes in season one, even tells her that she's special and doesn't need Ash. I think that makes her think a little bit harder that she's following a path that isn't her own.
Yeah, well, it's like she also, though, it shows that she's aware that she's fronting, that none of this bothers her and she's good. And then when Pablo goes, yeah, see, like, you don't care if you don't have a home or a family or whatever. And she's like, oh, shit, like, it actually worked. Everyone actually believes, I don't give a shit, I don't feel anything, I don't care, I'm just good. Which means now no one will be there to comfort me because they think I don't need it.
Yep.
And she realizes, like, I did my job too well.
Which
I
really
actually
makes me wonder, like,
me, like, so there's going to be a reckoning here. I think Kelly's due to come in big in season three.
I kept thinking Ruby was just lying to her to try to get her to, because, like,
in season one, she would have been,
but then in this season, she does it too. And I think, I honestly think it is almost that Ruby's trying to save her from making some of the same...
Well, Ruby is also in her position because of hubris.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and I think she wants to try to help her become...
She's manipulative,
her, well, also
but she's
her,
honest. Because
this is like a spoiler towards the end, but the speech really does play out. Like, Ruby wants to help her from making not the same mistake, but making a mistake where she's also following a dude and not following her own life choices anymore.
Yep.
And I think that's really interesting.
We'll get into that as we get there. But yeah, I think you have these, like I said, I think Kelly's due for the big character arc in season three. Because Pablo gets a chance to shine a lot in this season. And we plant a lot of seeds for Kelly. And I'd really like to see that pay off in the next season and really delve into more of what's making her tick and keeping her going, because she has never dealt with the whole trauma of losing her entire family, because it's been go, 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 go. And they're starting to have some quiet moments and the cracks are starting to show.
Yeah.
Because now she's stuck sitting with herself. And that's the worst thing if you're trying to hide from yourself. So she's due to have a breakdown and a freak out. So it'll be interesting to see if that comes up next season. Let's see. Oh, the car, meanwhile, now does the great car kill, which is it does like the 1990s gangsta thing on the where it can like bounce and then waits and then spins the tire and brings it down on the dude's face who's laying underneath it. And it just grinds it right off,
yeah,
which
gross.
Again, looks amazing. Such great gore. Brock shows up at the bar. Ash and Brock argue, decide to have their dick measuring contest via mechanical bull. Meanwhile, Ruby sweet talks Kelly into helping her outside by that same kind of speech. She's like, you don't need this asshole. You should be doing something better. And they head off on their own little mission. Brock wins as lewdly as possible in the mechanical bull contest. And then you have a very real moment where Ash and Brock confront each other after the mechanical bull contest because Brock's ready to like walk off with the bimbo. And Ash says, why don't you fucking come out and say it, Pop? And Brock admits he hates Ash because he killed Cheryl, which I think is often glossed over when you talk about this series. You forget that one of the people in the first movie is Ash's sister.
Yeah.
You think of it as a group of four teens, two couples. It's not. It's a couple, and then, well, maybe it is two couples. I can't remember if she's dating the other guy. It's implied she would have been maybe dating Chet, kind of, or maybe just Chet thinks they were. But
yeah, it's
it
implied,
is,
yeah.
Ash is up there with his girlfriend and his sister. And that's a very different emotional weight to carry if you get to this point. And, of course, that would make it so that, like, not only do you have to deal with, like, if you're Brock, not only have to deal with the idea that the whole town thinks your son killed, like, three people in the cabin, one of them was your daughter. Yeah, there's no evidence he did it. Yeah, he says he didn't do it. But your daughter's gone. Like, and suddenly there's emotional weight, and I think that's the point where the series pivots for me. And they suddenly go, oh, they're willing to have a moment that is an actual real-world consequence for all the slapsticky events of the movies. And it plays off to greater or lesser degrees a little bit throughout the rest of this season. But I think that made me go, oh shit, like, now we have to care about these regular townsfolk and their opinion of these crazy-ass supernatural events that, in general, when we think of the movies, we think of laughing at. And again, it's the idea of what happens when Bugs Bunny goes home. It's got to be awful because he's a monster. And that's what plays out over the course of this. As Brock walks away to the bathroom with the co-ed Chicky, Ash and Pablo realize that the Chicky is a deadite. Pablo gives Ash an actual pep talk this time,
yep.
And Ash fights the deadite right in front of his father, which makes Brock be like, oh shit, there's demons. You weren't lying this whole time. My son's a goddamn hero. They head out, and Ash is still holding the head of the person he just decapitated, which... Ash is not good at this game.
No.
whole bar panics, thinks Ashy Slashy is going on a new rampage. Brock and Ash have a heart-to-heart out in front of the bar, at which point the Delta runs Brock over, kills him.
In the grossest way.
In a very...
The car can only kill people grossly, is what
yeah,
it looks
it's
like.
It's very graphic, but it's just like, you again, if Ash loves it and cares about it, or it means something to him, it is taken away by the Deadites. And he gets literally 40 seconds... of his dad understanding him and loving him again before he's killed. It's just like, oh God, it's just heart-wrenching, especially after their whole, like, fuck you, son. Oh my God, I've been so wrong. I can say that. We can be a family. You're gone. Like, just a second of that. And again, this whole thing is still, like, bookended with, you know, an atom's width of space with dick jokes.
Mm.
But to me, those moments matter. Like, that's what gives this the weight to make you care about these characters a little bit. Otherwise, I think it would all get a little too much. So anyway, yeah, Brock gets killed. End of the episode. Anything else on that one?
This episode was the first time since 1999 that Lucy Lawless, Ted Raimi, and Bruce Campbell had all been together. That was a trivia from IMDb. Because they'd last
Xena?
Been together from Xena.
Xena, yeah, yeah.
I just found interesting. Because apparently they had all worked together on... This is also from IMDb.
the original Spider-Man.
Yes.
The Sam Raimi one.
Yeah, the Sam Raimi. They had all been in that movie, but they were never on set at the same time.
Which
together.
We also forgot to figure out who the fuck Lucy Lawless is.
Yeah, we totally
movie.
Didn't do that. Wait, who's Bruce Campbell in that?
He's oh, the ticket that won't right. let him ticket, in late ticket. To the show. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know who the hell Lucy Lawless was.
During our commercial break.
Maybe we'll find out. So the next episode, Pablo runs to the Delta to try to help. While Ash is standing over his father's body, the Delta grabs him with a bunch of seatbelts and yanks him in. As it hauls off with Pablo and the Lindsay is still in there.
Lacey.
Lacey is still in there. As it zooms by, Ash goes, "Not the classic!" And the Delta takes off, which made me super happy, because again, as I think I mentioned in the last episode about this, that's what Sam Raimi calls that car. He calls it the classic.
See, and this is why Brock's death and their heart-to-heart meant nothing to me, because it wasn't long enough for anything to actually matter to me.
Sure.
Because his first concern is once again the car, which is good, because that episode before starts with his love for the car.
Yeah.
And then this episode starts with his, like, mourning of the car, basically.
Yeah.
But for me, the whole Brock thing, like, totally just deflated and exploded into nothingness, because it didn't matter.
Ash has not got to have a mourning period, usually.
But he does, is the thing, and this season proves it. That's so, true. Like, that's why I took everything that happened and just, like, shat on it.
That's
I
a good
was,
point.
Like,
it is different from the thing, yeah. So Ash finds his drunken bartender buddy, Chet, to use his car.
A gremlin.
A little gremlin. Meanwhile...
That's for sale.
Yeah, F-O-U-R, sale. It's in the back window. That's so good. I'm just going to start putting that instead of, like, Watch
it's
Me.
Really,
yeah. I switched from Wash Me to I Wish My Wife Was This Dirty. but I think now I'm going to switch to for F-O-U-R, sale. Ruby and Kelly, meanwhile, since they headed off on their own, are headed back to the trailer to get well-armed, which they do. While in the car, the book starts talking shit to Pablo. And he has another vision of his death or something happening. Gets put in the trunk by Ashley.
That's his dream.
Oh, yeah. In his dream. That's what it is. In his dream, he's, like, impaled on, like, a stop sign or something.
Yeah,
like,
and then Ash just pulls him out.
Ash, like, pulls it out and then is like, here you go, buddy.
You get it. He's like, you need to take a nap.
And shoves him in the trunk.
And then
that's
shoves
it.
In
so,
the
yeah,
trunk.
It's like, maybe his death. Yeah, that's what, death or something. So he gets shoved in a trunk and then kind of like, wah. Ash and Chet find the Delta. Ash starts shooting at it while they're driving. And then they pull over. Ash explains the situation to Chet. And Chet's just totally on board.
Also, Chet was disappointed that they weren't going to Mamre Lanes,
which was
the strip club they were supposed to be going to.
So they head to the Smash 'Em Up, which is where apparently Ash's dad got the car in the first place. And Ash is going to have to fight the Delta. Which,
also,
why not?
Before this, Ruby's car magically appears again.
Yeah, not sure where that came from.
Don't know where that
were
came from.
Were they driving
at all.
Separate this whole time and she just parked somewhere we didn't see?
Maybe.
Sure the four of them rolled up together in front of Ash's house.
Yeah, they were together.
Maybe they're towing it behind the trailer?
Maybe.
It's one of those things where it's like, well, because movie.
And it literally only appears in that scene.
I think
she's
so.
Never driving it again.
It's just plot convenient.
It's just like this one, whoop, she has a car.
It would have been very simple for them to just boost a car.
It would have made almost
that
more sense.
That would have been much more, yeah. So they don't. Again, if you have an idea what that's about, let us know. Oh, wait. Actually, no. Ruby was in the town before them. That's why they're in that town. They went there to find Ruby. Ruby's car would be there. That's how Ruby
Derp. You're right.
See, now, if we were the insecure types, we'd edit this out. I'm leaving our little journey of self-discovery in.
I like it.
Yeah. So there we go. All right, good. Mystery solved. Fucking way to go, gang. Scooby snacks for everyone. So Ash has to fucking fight the Delta. Meanwhile, Ruby and Kelly are going all super tactical. Are they back at the fucking...
They go.
I want to say confectionery, but that's not it.
They go back to the... I think it's the crematorium.
Maybe. I don't think we really know. But anyway, they're just shooting a bunch of the spawn. Ash scores a hit on the Delta. Pablo and the girl are able to get out. The book tells Pablo to cast it back into its dimension, and then Pablo will be able to live, you know, saying he'll be saved from his visions. Kelly and Ruby are kicking a ton of ass. Pablo says whatever word the book tells him he has to say, and the Delta just stops where it is. Ruby and Kelly kill all the spawn. Pablo throws the book through a portal to hell that's in the trunk of the Delta. Ruby can feel that it's gone. And they're all like, all right,
Ruby's not like all right.
Ruby's not thrilled. Ruby's like, the book's gone.
She's like,
and
something's
wrong. Ash is just like, we did it. And they're like, you think? He's like, yeah, probably. And then they kind of start wandering off. And then as they are out of sight of the thing, the trunk flies open and this big flaming person escapes from it. And that's the end of this episode.
And this episode for me is important because Ash is willing to kill his car to save Pablo.
Self-sacrifice for the first time, yep, on Ash's part, I think.
He was willing to stab his car to get Pablo out, which is a pretty big deal.
Agreed.
And they also talk about that he just needs to give it a lube job when the car is all busted up and on fire.
Yeah.
Ash's theory to get it fixed and back and running is just give it a lube job.
Yeah. He's like, it's nothing. You can't buff
and
out
Pablo's
lube
like,
job.
He's like, the trunk goes to hell. And he's like, lube job. I'll just buff it out.
So next episode, we have our opening on a cop checking out the aftermath of the party at the bar. And she heads into the bathroom and finds the corpse of the deadite that Ash killed, well, at least the body of the corpse. And then there's a naked dude in there. And he is able to just compel her to do stuff, whatever he says. And, hey, turns out, yeah, what? This is Ball.
I want to talk about Ball for a moment.
Sure.
The actor makes me uncomfortable. He's uncomfortable. He's a peculiar looking man.
He has a bit of the Innsmouth look about him.
He
got a Brad Dourif-ness.
Yes, that is definitely
what
it is.
Which is what I actually kind of thought it was for a second, and then I was like, oh, that would have been neat, wouldn't it?
I'm just like, I just find it interesting.
They probably couldn't afford Brad Dourif, because he would actually cost
that they money. Also went with that hair. He has like a really stringy, weird...
He's upsetting.
Like, I don't...
But I mean, he's supposed to be upsetting.
But he's supposed to be, like, he can make you do his... Like, I guess, like, the
but
whole...
But it's not because he has, like, he's so attractive.
But they do
to.
Imply,
it's...
though, because...
Well, because he can tell you he is.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, all of his he is seducing people to do things.
Yes.
Because the female cop that he meets in the bathroom, he, like, walks up to her and she starts taking her shirt off, which is not necessary for what he's doing. And they start kissing. Then he makes a second female cop do a similar thing. Like, he uses seduction, and usually, like, the way to show it... Which, you're right, it doesn't matter what he looks like.
That's the thing, is I don't think it's seduction. I think it's just magic. He's just compelling people. That's a different
thing. With seduction.
Well, but to seduce someone is
to... But he's using seduction, then.
I guess I just think of seduction as being a different thing.
Oh.
Compelling means you have to do what I say no matter what.
But you're using sex each time.
He's using it in a way that uses sex, but the sex has nothing to do with it. Because he clearly can look like anything. I think he could show up looking like a gorilla that's masturbating, and they're still going to find him sexy. Because it's not about what he's doing. He's not, because to me, seducing means using your looks to get what you want. He's not using his looks to get
seducing
what he wants.
Seducing doesn't need to
He's
use,
compelling, and then he's using that to get sex.
Doesn't need to be physical. I just find it interesting that they chose, with everyone else not looking like a weird person, he looks so out of place. Like, this is once again like me, like the concept of casting extras that look like normal people in a normal bar. He looks so out of place to me in his weird like goth attempt, and like it's his stringy hair. Like, I don't understand
stringy.
Like, who went like, you know what, let's take like a prince demon type guy and give him really stringy hair.
I wonder if they wanted us to know that, like, I mean, sure, Lucy Lawless is a demon, but she's not that bad of a demon. Look how cute she is. And then this guy's like, well, you're a demon and you're weird looking. You must be a really bad demon. I mean, that is honestly like,
I mean,
the way
character,
like, that's why orcs are gross. Is like, you know, you make your characters look better or worse,
and I will
depending
admit,
on like what's in their heart.
I'm probably biased because I am from the Supernatural.
Because you do love orcs.
I do love orcs. But I'm from like the era that I've been watching Supernatural and stuff, and they definitely make a point of demons looking normal. And not like,
but that's a
demon-y.
Modern invention.
But I mean,
they
make Lucy. I guess that is the thing. Like, he just looks so.
I really like his look, because the thing is, you can also see that dude can look relatively normal in a later episode.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, I think he
see,
does.
To me, he still doesn't.
All right. I mean, normal as Jeffrey Combs.
So. Like, he doesn't look normal to me. It just seems like a really. And
which
I,
also
no
made
offense
me think that
to this man.
No, of course
he's
not.
He's a wonderful man. I bet he
I think
does.
He's a good actor.
He but. Is. I just the hair thing, just like.
No.
I don't understand,
but that's out of his hands, so yeah, it's not
why him. They picked that. And giving him earrings is the other thing. Like,
I don't even notice he had earrings.
I think he has one at least. And I'm like, what is this? Is the bad boy demon thing? So he has some earring? I don't know.
Yeah, bad boy demon.
Okay.
So anyway.
I also like that his first appearance is in a bathroom. Like, for an epic demon, like your first appearance is in a bathroom. Oh. I don't know, I'm just thinking it's funny.
So he takes off the cop's skin. He slices up her back and it kind of seems to split like he's going to pull it off like a suit, which is foreshadowing. So Ash is now walking down the street, going to go back and talk to new Linda, the waitress, and gets pinched by the cops. Chet is also in the pokey. Looks like Ball is now wearing the cop's skin. So the waitress and Lacey, so Linda and Lacey, which double L names drove me nuts trying to keep notes. So Linda and Lacey show up at the station. They're all worried. The Ball cop goes looking for Ash once he hears that Ash is in the lockup. She lets him out for a phone call, but then just kind of abandons him there. And then the phone doesn't really work, but then he gets a phone call that's all creepy spoopy. The gang shows up at the jail, and then you end up with a, like, The Thing style standoff where Ruby explains that that's what Ball does, is he infiltrates a group, gets them all to turn against each other, and when there's only one standing, he has all the power and walks off and does it again for his weird demon jollies. And so cop obviously is pissed off at, like, the gang. The gang is all pissed off at the cop for arresting Ash, and they're worried about Ball and, you know, yada yada yada. So it's just a lot of, like, you did it, you didn't, guns being pointed at people. Ruby goes to the basement to get the Kandarian dagger. She finds a cop hiding behind a shelf, and then sure enough, like, the door to lock up for the evidence lockup slams shut, and then the two of them are trapped down there. Pablo reveals to Kelly and Ash he's got some weird shit happening on his stomach, so he's afraid he might be Ball, because he's got weird bubbling, oozy sore things happening, and he's very concerned that means he must be Ball. Turns out the hiding cop in that basement is Ball, so Ball and Ruby talk. Meanwhile, upstairs, Sheriff gets the upper hand, and things go badly for the group. A skinless deadite then attacks, which again looks super fucking dope. Like, I don't know why this show can make things look so cool, and like a lot of movies we watch don't look so good. Ash manages to kill it. Linda, however, being disgusted by her husband, the sheriff, dumps him. Meanwhile, Pablo is barfing, and his weird stuff on his stomach is being turned into actual Sumerian words a la the Necronomicon. He's basically turning into one big book, very much in the vein of Clive Barker's Book of the Dead, wherein you've got all these messages like scratched into your skin. Very painful for Pablo. He's not thrilled.
He's not happy.
He's not too thrilled. So this one is very much like introduces us to Ball and gives us some of the rules of how his character works.
Ball also, while in the cop's body, makes out with
Lucy Lawless?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember who.
But I'm just saying, like, that's, like, once again, like, that's, he's using his...
He likes the sex, yeah.
But he's using that, like, it just is a weird thing, like, that's how he uses to...
Yeah, because it's unnecessary. That's the thing, is that, like, it's just, that's his, like, he can...
And also, to me, it was...
He can get whatever he needs, but he'd also like a little sugar. And it's like, ew, you're gross.
It was also a petty move and a cheap move on them, I think, again, to have two women kiss. Like, I think...
Oh, for sure.
It like, was a very...
Definitely, they knew exactly what they were doing.
It was lazy writing, yeah, for sure. To an extreme.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely just, like, paint by numbers, we can do this scene.
Yeah.
And whatever. It's lame. But that leaves us with, a very much in pain Pablo starting to look like the Necronomicon, despite the fact that it's been banished to whatever dimension it came from.
Oh, it's also the cop in the basement. That's Ball. Lucy Lawless is reading the Necronomicon. Hmm? And that's... Lucy Lawless gets the Necronomicon?
No, there's no Necronomicon. They threw it in the... Delta.
Doesn't she get it back? I put down... Or is she reading...
She's reading Pablo.
Where is I'm thinking that... Because I wrote down she is referenced back to it being written in French.
Hmm.
Oh, no, it's not that she's reading it. She's chanting something in the basement.
Ah.
She starts saying a spell, and then that's when the cop asks if that's French.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Because then that references sense. Back to everything.
The book
everything.
Should be gone, because that's the whole point. Yeah. All right, cue. Anything else on this episode?
I had little written, because honestly, this was a weak episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's one of the ones I have the fewest notes about as well. Cool. We're going to take a quick break and wet our whistles, and we'll be back for the second half of season 2. And we're back with the second half of Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2. So,
Oh. During our brief messages, did look up to see what Lucy Lawless's role was in Spider-Man.
And it is?
It was Punk Rock Girl, which neither of us could remember a scene in which that would be an even, so... If you guys can even remember, like, what scene that is, and
let
then
us know.
We could, like, find it on YouTube probably or something.
If you guys can even remember the song Punk Rock Girl by the Dead Milkmen, that'll also make me happy.
If you guys just remember anything about Punk Rock Girl, let us know.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, episode 6. We open on the gang returning to Ash's house. Pablo starts having massive demonic seizures, and they're all like, that's not good. So Pablo gets brought into the house and upstairs to Ash's room. Meanwhile, the townsfolk are forming a mob. A bunch of them show up at the sheriff's office, and as he's dealing with a bunch of people screaming in his face, kind of time slows down, and Ball starts whispering in his ear, trying to give him some ideas of how to deal with the situation, which to me is like, that's the more seductive version of Ball, which he clearly doesn't need to do. Because we watch him just simply tell people to do and they
look,
do it.
I have issues with Ball.
Sure, I'm just saying, but like...
His powers are very inconsistent, and he also could use all of them at one point just to end everything.
It's that whole thing where, like, you know, if a person actually wanted to, they would just crush people with this.
Yeah.
But, like, that's the thing is, like, this to me is seduction. Like, the sheriff has free will, but can be tempted to do what Ball wants, because Ball can know just the right thing to say. Whereas when he's talking to the cop in the bathroom, it's just compulsion. He can say, hop on one foot and she'll do it, you know? And it's like, so why not just tell the sheriff, go to their house and have the entire mob storm in and kill them?
Yeah.
Why say, wait outside and yell stuff? Like, it doesn't make sense,
yeah,
right? Like, if you're going to go, just go all the way. And so, like, that's the whole thing whenever you have, like, the tempter, temptress. Like, you got to do... There has to be a level of they need the person to take that final step themselves, and that appears to be what he's doing with the sheriff. Like, the sheriff can't be compelled
to do it. But that makes no sense.
As we tempted, except that we don't see that happen in all the other examples of what Ball's doing. So that's a little weird.
This is
on the second viewing that this is starting to be a thing on nitpick.
I will remember about this. Remind me about
remind
this.
You about the difference
there we go. That. At the end of the season.
Okay.
Because what Ball says at the end makes all these actions really weird.
Okay. So the townsfolk form the mob, and Ball starts whispering to Sheriff, goading him on. Meanwhile, that we find out from Ruby that, Pablo is becoming one with the book. Like, the book is re-manifesting in our reality through Pablo, and once it's done, it will just replace Pablo. There will no longer be a Pablo, there will just be a new Necronomicon. Obviously, people are not thrilled. So they need a game plan, and since Ball can, you know, skin hop through people, they have to figure out what to do. Ash has a plan that involves getting close to Ball once and ramming a pet tracker down his throat. So no matter who skin he hops into, they'll know where he is because of the pet tracker.
A pet tracker that existed because Eli was stealing his drugs.
Yeah, Eli was stealing his weed and getting high and running all over the trailer and he couldn't find him. Eli is his lizard. I think we mentioned him in the first season. Eli still pops up here and there. In fact, I think in the photo you posted, Eli's on Ash's shoulder.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
He was in the first episode too. We forgot to mention him while they're out at the bar. Eli's
also at the bar.
He's with some ladies. Who are like petting him,
yeah,
I believe.
Eli's getting some attention. I don't think you see him after that, though.
We do not, but...
I like Eli a lot.
I imagine that he stayed in Jacksonville holding down the fort.
Yeah, Eli's just like, you get this, guys. I'll hold it down here.
Yeah.
Ear. Like... everybody's like, that's the dumbest thing we've ever heard. Ruby wants to use some incantations on Pablo to...
really pop that pee on Pablo.
Thank you. if I remember right, she wants to speed up the manifestation so they can get a passage from the
spell,
book that
yeah.
would be useful to
the
get rid of Ball.
Because the spell they need, yeah, wasn't...
Because once they get rid of Ball,
yeah.
things should be fine, but they don't have enough stuff, and they're running out of time because Ball's now literally at the gates with an army.
So she was
going to
hurt Pablo.
She's like, this is going to suck, it's going to hurt. And this is where, you know, you have Kelly be like, where's my strong vagina? Like,
this is also when Ash says... This is like when his love of Pablo also becomes like very apparent because he just says,
romantic.
Do not kill Pablo.
Do not kill my Pablo.
Do not kill my Pablo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and this is also, I think it's before this, is when he, Ash continues to stand up for Pablo and then calls Kelly the daughter he never had, mm-hmm. which is interesting because it changes from like him wanting to sleep with her, which we get halfway through season one that's already fading.
It's vanishing.
But we've totally like done like a 180 and now are like completely at the other spectrum.
Yeah,
where
now he's like aware she's hot, but it's just not on the table.
Yeah, yeah, so now he's like, oh, you are like being little me.
Yep, for sure. Now the mob shows up in full force outside, led by the sheriff. Ruby is going to do the hoodoo to Pablo. Ash heads upstairs, and Cheryl's room at the end of the hall calls to him. And the unseen force shows up again due to the ritual that Ruby is enacting, where she's got the little circle of salt around Pablo, to which, you know, Kelly asks, like, how is that going to keep him safe? And she's like, oh, no, that will keep us safe from him.
Because it's Ruby, she doesn't ask that. Lacey asks that, because Lacey's up there now.
Linda.
No, Lacey. Linda's downstairs with...
Oh, Linda's downstairs. Yes, you're right.
I'm sorry. Linda ends up being downstairs with...
With Kelly. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. They don't go upstairs at first. Lacey goes upstairs. I got them confused. I'm sorry. This will all make sense if you watch the show, which you should do. So anyway, ritual's happening in Ash's room. Kelly and Linda are holding off the mob downstairs, just kind of firing pot shots, not trying to hurt anybody, but just keep them spooked so they can't really, like, raid the house. Ash heads upstairs, and Cheryl's room calls to him. Unseen Force shows up outside. Ash enters Cheryl's room, and Chet's in there, like, maybe jerking it.
Wearing her sweater? Because it doesn't fit him. Or is it supposed to be
I think it's just a shitty old sweater.
Okay.
And he's holding, like, a portrait of Cheryl, and he's got, like, her clothes laid on the bed. So it's like, Chet's in there to jerk it.
And he's, like, it's implied that he's jerking it.
Yeah, like, you never, like, see his dick in his hand, which, like, wouldn't surprise me if they'd show it, but they don't quite go there. And Ash and Chet have a bit of an awkward conversation. Anyway, they skedaddle out of the room because they can hear the evil... Or Ash can hear the unseen force coming. And then it smashes into Cheryl's room and smashes the portrait of her. And then the portrait of her starts bleeding from the eyes and the mouth, which actually looks really fucking cool.
It looks totally 80s.
It is very... It's a shot that you would have seen in the original movie that I think is gorgeous. Because there's literally just pinpricks in the photo that are bleeding. It looks awesome. I love that.
And then pours down the side of the dresser.
Yes. And once it touches her dress, it reanimates her, which is awesome. And Cheryl, who looks a lot like the actress, I can't believe it's her. Is it?
I could be wrong, but I thought one of the actresses, like somebody reprised their role either. It had to be her, because who else would it be?
Then she aged remarkably well. Because she does look exactly like her. We should have looked this up before we started recording, because we're monsters.
I feel like when we were like first watching it, I read that somebody was the same. Like it was.
It would make
somebody
sense then if it's her, because she just is Cheryl, and basically she comes storming out of the room into the hall, and then there's a little bit of banter, and she turns into Detta and attacks. Cheryl traps Chet in her room with her. Ash saws his way in while Chet gets like a bite on the neck, and she's about to like kill him, but Ash makes it back in because he has a sweet, sweet chainsaw. Cheryl just disappears. Now Kelly heads upstairs to check on Pablo. Ash goes downstairs to find Cheryl. Cheryl kills Chet, which made me sad because I really like Chet. He's a monster.
Interesting addition.
Yeah, he was like a dipshit and a monster, but like was really fun to have around. And again, it was like Ash's only buddy that was like thick and thin. So ends up Ash blasts Cheryl out the front door in front of the mob. And then has it on the porch, and like, holy shit, he's killing people again. He's just like, no, just wait for it. Wait for it. Any second now. Any second, she's going to pop up. And then she, like, twitches and sits up, and he blasts her in the face again. They're like, oh my god, he killed her. And then she pops up, and they see her demon face, and they're like, what the shit? And she kills, like, a dude.
Yeah.
And then he blasts her, and then, like, chucks her in a trunk and saws her head off with a chainsaw, and everybody's like, woo, Ash is the best. Because movie. So now the crowd is all like super into that. And as soon as he kind of gets to that point, Ball knocks him out. He has like a split second of being adored by his hometown crowd.
And then, Ball as a angry
as one of the mob.
Housewife, yep. Basically.
Knocks him out. Yep. Anything else on that one that you had for your
name? I had just a good Kelly quote, which is, I will fuck your faces with bullets.
She has some really great shit.
She's yelling.
Screams.
She also yells or admits that she has now committed a felony by firing into a crowd.
Yeah.
which is really good.
Fired in a crowd of civilians. I just committed a felony.
And the thing I noticed, and maybe this is wrong, or maybe it's just the lighting of the house, but it seemed like Cheryl, compared to the previous deadites that have been in the seasons, looked more like the deadites from the original, like from the
Very
movies.
Much so.
Like her face was more corpsey looking. And I mean, she was a longer corpse,
blue
but
power.
And then I wrote down, she has a bluish tinge, which was deaf. And I don't know if they were. I don't know if it was because they were trying to look like Cheryl from the movie or if it was just, yeah.
So I assumed that was going for the same look that she had as a deadite in the movie. Because she very much, both in life and death here, looks like Cheryl from the original.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think you nailed it. That they were definitely going for the less dramatic deadite. She doesn't have the crazy fucked up teeth that you see in like Evil Dead 2.
No, she just looks like a corpse with
the white eyes.
Yeah.
Like those horrible contacts that you used to have to wear. So yeah, she very much, I think, is made to look like the era of which she was a deadite.
Okay.
And I think it's awesome. Like, they do a good job recreating that.
Yeah.
We'll get into recreating deadites later. But, episode 7, open with a montage from Evil Dead 1 and 2 of all the crazy shit that's been happening, and then Ash goes like, and wakes up in an asylum. His doctor comes in, Dr. Peacock, to check on him. Boy, how did his seizure look like, Ball?
With normal hair.
Normal hair and some glasses. And here's the thing is, I think there he could just, if he was just a character actor that played like a doctor in a show, like that's, he just would be that. He looks super fucking weird and creepy when you give him the stringy hair and he's all like hunched over looking up through his eyebrows.
And maybe they did that.
But if he's just like a
so...
guy, he just looks like a guy. I think they're accentuating his weirdness. Because otherwise he's definitely got like a craggy face, like really prominent cheekbones, sunken cheeks, prominent chin.
And he has buck teeth.
He has bunny teeth. Yeah.
Or bunny teeth, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like... And so, like, there's all those things, and I think that's what they did, is they pulled all that forward.
Which makes sense if they're trying to pull that forward, because then they can have this character look much more normal.
And I think that's the thing, is they wanted to try to suddenly make him plausible as part of Ash's psychosis, you know?
Which does, that makes more sense.
I was impressed, actually, when he walked into the room, like, you look nothing like that fucking weirdo from the last episode. Like, okay, right on.
Also, before you get too far in, Ash has my other favorite thing that he keeps doing, which is, you're that demon, Bill.
He calls him Bill in every episode.
Which is hilarious.
I can never remember Ball. Turns out Ash has his hand. It's all wrapped up, and he's told he had a psychotic break.
He has an oven mitt.
He has a big old, like enough padding to look like an oven mitt. But he's told he had a psychotic break and murdered 4 people in a cabin. And everything he knows, and we as an audience from watching the movies and stuff, know is a delusion. Ash immediately attacks the doctor, accuses him of being Ball. The doc slams a needle in his neck, and he passes out. And I love the detail of when he passes out and goes, like, thud on the floor. We get a view through the floor, like, looking up, as though the floor is made of glass.
Yeah.
And when he hits, his dentures come out.
Yeah.
They don't forget that he has dentures. And every now and then, when he gets hit, his dentures fly out. And I love that they keep that gag from, like, episode 1. Ruby shows up as a nurse, but doesn't seem to know who he is. And then the doctor brings out the Ashy Slashy puppet, which is amazing. It's just a little Ash with a chainsaw on one hand and is like, I need one in my life so bad. It is the coolest thing. And when he gets put on Ash's hand, it appears to just be sentient. Like Ash starts arguing with it. And he can't quite seem to tell what's going on, and it's being sarcastic and being a dick, but also telling him how he's crazy and that none of this has happened, and yet it's a puppet talking to him.
Yes.
So, like, it's all like, what, this is all very strange. Anyway, Ash escapes his room and, like, has a moment where, like, thinks he puts his arm through the wall and it's all like that black goo, like, in the cabin, but then all of a sudden, like, whoa, and he wakes up and he's fine, like, the corridors are tilting. And he's kind of getting rocked back and forth a la Star Trek, where you pretend you got hit by, like, a photon torpedo. And he just, like, enters a random room and finds Kelly, except she's just an inmate. And
not Kelly.
Is just crazy. So it's just, like, real-life Kelly. So if he's constructing this fantasy in his head, it's based off the people he's around. This is his Kelly. It's actually another inmate he's seen who is very obviously crazy. And she's telling him how she knows how long she's been there exactly. She counts on the wall and there's all the hash marks. She's like, look how I count. 1, breaks one of her fingers. 2, breaks one of her... And like, I fucking... Ugh. Like,
okay, so that was super gross.
It's so gross.
But somehow, as listeners will know, Matt was in a production during the Twin Cities Horror Festival.
Intuition and the Mantis.
And there's a finger-breaking scene in that. Somehow that sound was actually more horrific to me.
Which we did live on stage with no props.
Yeah, which I think it's because it was smaller. And in reality, I think a finger break would actually just be just one pop.
Yeah, it would.
But and I think after hearing that on stage and it was just one pop versus like this is very much like the crunch, yeah. crackle pop.
Which I'll see if I can get Phil to do that and just film just a close up of what he's like, just a hand and him doing it so you can hear it and yeah. see it. Because it is alarmingly
and that's,
effective.
I just think, like, I don't want to say it spoiled me for movies, but I do think that sound is just so much what I am imagining what an actual bone break would sound like.
Yeah. And Phil comes from a heavy stage combat and fight choreography background.
So that scene was still super impactful,
yeah.
but at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was like, I've heard creepier.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And also, there's another thing that, like, as we've talked about before with Twin Cities Horror Festival stuff, it's one thing to watch a movie, it's another thing to see it live in front of you.
Yeah.
And know that there's no green screen.
Because, yeah, the
no
first
CGI.
Time I saw it, I was not sure how he did it at all.
That audience lost their shit
yeah.
every night because they just suddenly, you see everybody go, no, because there's no place for him to hide. There's no bit to have, like, some celery hidden. Mm-hmm. And you hear these horrible sounds and the reaction. It's really effective. So I can see what you mean.
Yeah.
It is still gross to watch someone snap
gross.
Their finger back. But I know how, but without having that experience, this is still, like, the default way
yeah,
you
and
see
I, and I'm not saying to say it's bad. I'm just saying, like, it
no,
is
not bad.
An interesting, like, having different experiences.
Well, and the less is more is mm-hmm. an interesting thing, too. Because that's rarely does horror go for subtlety like that in the gore department. Usually either you do gore or you don't. You know, you do, like, psychological terror or
sound.
Crazy shit. Yeah.
But it would be interesting to have or see if horror movies started doing more realistic sounds for, like...
Well, the fact that picking up a Bowie knife wouldn't go, whing.
Well,
it would
like
just
that,
be you pick
or like,
up a knife.
And I understand why they do it, because they have to make it more visceral and like
yeah.
something you can experience. But it would be interesting to see if like a movie, just like movies that try to do like things with no cuts or like different things like that, like a movie that actually tries to have like as close to realistic sound would be
yeah,
really
interesting. Yeah, and it's just what I think, and the reason I'm sure they don't generally is that it's just mostly quiet then.
Yeah.
And like, but that also though could be a thing if you amplify that effect.
Yeah, I'm not saying, like...
To such a degree, that could be amazing, where it's just like, oh, God, the silence is oppressive, and you're waiting for the next tiny noise.
Yeah.
And then a squeaking door suddenly is thunderous and makes everybody jump. Like, there's a way to play that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a way to play anything if you do it properly. It just would be more of a challenge, but I like that idea. So, yeah, he finds the gal, looks like Kelly, starts breaking her fingers, and while this is happening, everybody's screaming, Pablo shows up, but as an orderly. Jesus Christ. If I had handwriting, this would be easier. Ash gets to go for a little bit of the old shock treatment. Meanwhile, he hallucinates that Chet is also there getting shock treatment with him, and they kind of bro out a little bit, and then Chet just gets barbecued.
But I wrote down, this is Chet is the only one who knows what's up. Because you can tell Chet's a manifestation from Ash.
Yes.
So Ash is inhabiting Ball's world, quote-unquote world, mm-hmm. with his own memories, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call them, which is interesting because Chet's the only one who's then trying to be like, no, this is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
This is not...
Ash is blocking off his own little corner.
Yeah, and trying
to
like have
Chet.
Someone help him rally to realize that he's not in the real
his
world.
Lifeline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting, especially since it was Chet. Like, to have him be like the voice of reason was
yeah.
funny.
Ash tries to chat up Ruby as a nurse. In the cafeteria, that does not work.
Doing
Ash,
her best nurse ratchet.
Doing
her, he even
yeah.
calls her.
He calls
nurse
her that,
ratchet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I guess it's because to me, I'm like, that's a little on the nose. And I'm like, you know what, though? If you don't literally say the words nurse ratchet, your audience probably doesn't know nurse ratchet at this point. It's been 7 years.
I mean,
years.
I thought, like anyone dressed like that, I just like instantly go nurse ratchet.
But like, if you say nurse ratchet, does a 20-year-old know what
no.
movie that's even
no.
from? I'm not saying that's bad.
No, but you're
I'm just
right.
saying like you
the
have to spell
touch
it out
points
a little
are gone.
More. Like, it's honestly, the reference is kind of lost. I don't know if there's another nurse in a more recent movie that you could do instead. It would make sense, of course, for like, you know, Rainey
you
and Campbell
tell,
and
like,
company to do that reference because
yeah,
that's
exactly.
their era. But as a cultural touchstone,
I'm
Nurse
sure
Ratched now just means mean nurse.
Yeah.
No one knows why anymore, or at least of our younger generations. They don't know why.
Probably
and
true.
So, like, it's just an interesting thing that you kind of have to go for the obvious gag, because if you don't make it real obvious, no one will even know. But that's just shorthand for jerk. So, it's interesting. Ash incites a riot as a ruse to swipe an ID card off one of the orderlies.
The Pablo orderly.
Yeah. Ashy Slashy wakes up Ash in the night, the puppet, and Ash and Ashy Slashy attempt to break out.
With Kelly.
With Kelly. Yep. It goes very bad, because as Ash is trying to get through the thing with the key card, which isn't working properly, Kelly kills Pablo. And
because he's a
dragon demon, and he's like, what are you talking about? You're not supposed to kill him. There's no demons in the Necronomicon. She's like, there's all kinds of demons. He's like, no, there's like
deadites.
They argue, like, and she's like, well, you vampires. And he's like, no, okay, well, there's that one time the sun did work, which is an Evil Dead 2 reference, where after Ash gets transformed into a deadite and splashed into the pool after the unseen force hits him, it's actually the very beginning, which is the continuation of the first film. He gets up, but the sun has come out, and so he transforms back to regular Ash. It's the only time the sunlight has proven to have any effect. They plan on using sunlight to defeat the Necronomicon in the first movie, which is why Ash gives Linda that pendant with the little magnifying glass looking thing, because they're going to focus the sun through that to burn the book. Ended up not being practical to do that whole thing, so they just chuck the book in the fireplace at the end. That's the different idea. But it's an interesting nod to a little bit of lore that doesn't stack up.
Yeah.
And a failed ending to the first movie that didn't get shot. Because while we talk about the inconsistencies in this series of stuff, the movies are filled with inconsistencies as well. And so it's really interesting for them to literally not only acknowledge, but do full stop point out one.
I mean,
as a joke,
they
which
know
is
what side
interesting.
Their bread is buttered. I mean, like, they know that. Yeah.
But it's just that's really I love that, and it's for me. That's what that joke is for. That joke is for the nerds like me. You know,
because I
was
did not
definitely
know that.
I was super breathing through my mouth while they said that. So it sure looks like Ash has killed some random orderlies, and he's cray.
In the best scene, in my opinion.
Oh, you want to talk it through?
No, it's just when he's like, I didn't do this, when the orderlies come up and he's implied killed Kelly and the guard, which we know Kelly, not Kelly, has killed, actually.
Yeah.
They come up and they're like, oh my god, what did you do? And then he's like, I didn't do this. And then Ashy Slashy, like, is like, spits out a jawbone.
Yeah.
And is like, meh, like, yeah, you did.
Maybe I did.
But the fact that he spits out the jaw
is hilarious
to me.
So now we have Ash in a straitjacket, and Ash is denying he did any of this, and Dr. Peacock's like showing him the security footage of him doing it. The doctor lets Linda come in and visit him, and Ash begins to question his sanity, and he kind of does the whole brooding look out the window thing and sees the classic pull up with Ruby, Kelly, and Pablo, and they get out. And he turns around and he confesses everything to Dr. Peacock. And Dr. Peacock is like, oh, finally, you know, I was going to have to transfer you to another treatment, another facility where the treatments aren't even as kind as mine, which don't seem great. Now, what do we have to do to get you better? Is we have to destroy the book. Say it. And Ash is like, we have to destroy the Necronomicon. Next episode picks up with the gang finding Ash at the asylum due to the goddamn pet tracker Ash has on him.
So beautiful.
And swearing to each other they will not say that's how they did it, because they'll never hear the end of it, because it's a stupid pet tracker plan worked.
So good.
Now, the asylum is disgusting. And the thing is I assumed this was all in Ash's head. It's the real place with real people.
Before we even get in the asylum, though.
Yes.
Kelly boosts Pablo's ego and gets him ready to go by saying we can bring back the Ghost Beaters.
I love every time the Ghost Beaters get called back.
And I think she might call him a powerful vagina again, I think.
She might.
But maybe not in the beginning.
Because Ghost Beaters comes up like 3 times this season, you know, which if you remember from our last episode or from watching it, is the name that Pablo proposes outside the bookstore for their team. He wants to call them the Ghost Beaters, but like, that's the worst fucking name I've ever heard.
They just make
but it keeps, they
but then
actually,
Kelly keeps
they, whenever they refer to themselves as a group, they use Ghost Beaters.
Yeah.
It does stick and it works, which again shows.
He just brings it up. Kelly doesn't say it. Pablo says, we're going to bring back the Ghost Beaters.
Yeah.
My bad.
But the other people say it.
Yes.
Like, so it's just, it did work. And it shows that there is actually some love between these people, which again is one of those little, like, heartfelt moments they sneak in among all the dick jokes. So, but the asylum's fucking disgusting. I assume this is all just an artifact of, like, Ash's imagination. And, like, no, it's exactly as he's seeing it. He is literally just in that place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking gross.
Which is not an asylum.
No, but,
it's
like,
it's just a rundown, crazy people place.
Yeah, but, like, how does that exist? Like, there are literally, like, security guards and patients.
No, it's not. Okay, and I guess I'm not saying you're wrong.
I might be.
I interpreted it, I mean, I guess it's all this season, or this episode, so it doesn't really matter. So, I interpret it as there are that it's an abandoned building and there are squatters there, and that was a night watchman who has to watch the, or was called to watch the abandoned building, because abandoned buildings or like big buildings like that still have night watchmen. Because he didn't look like a security
guard.
He looked like a...
he didn't look like an asylum guard, certainly. He looked like a security guard.
He looked like a security guard. So, to me, it was an abandoned...
So, you think she's just a drugged-out squatter?
Correct.
Just, okay. That actually works. Because I was going to say, like, I don't get how this is functional. So, that would make much more sense. So, I think your call is much better on that than
mine. Yeah, so that's how I had taken it.
Because, and again, this is the idea that, like, when Ash has his Pablo and Kelly visions... He later sees that the security guard is not named Pablo, he's named Reg. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they even give us a name for the junkie.
No.
Maybe they do. But it would make sense then if she's just a squatter who happens to be in that room, and then he's the guy who's like in charge of making sure kids don't sneak in and break the windows and get hurt.
Is a common character in horror movies. That's security guy.
Sure.
So kind of how I took it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know there's enough weird... creepy abandoned buildings around where I grew up that like just nothing happens.
Oh, and
there's a chain link fence and it's just like, don't go in here. And then y'all do. You know, but like there's a certain amount of money that has to be spent to make it worth guarding a thing that is already a non-zero sum, which is more than most people do.
Like, we watched, you've seen Mirrors. That's the same Kiefer Sutherland. Like,
yeah, fair.
Like, there's like buildings
that just seems like
remodeled.
To have a hope of rebirth.
Yeah.
This place does not look like anyone's planning on renovating it and turning it into something.
But, I mean, they're still...
Like, the closed Macy's downtown, they got security there still.
Yeah.
They're going to put something in that building. This place has been abandoned since the 50s.
I mean, it could have just been that someone got a report that something was going on. Because Ash is obviously actually there. Like, there are people actually there. So, like...
Yeah,
he could have just come to, like, investigate that night.
And this is the tiniest of nits to pick. But, like, I do think that makes more sense.
Yeah, that's how I take it.
Yeah. So I'm glad that makes more sense then. So anyway, but it looks to me a lot like the school from Silent Hill 2 is basically what it looks like. Because like the office especially, like when they first come in, that area, I'm like, oh, that's just the office area. Like that's so it. So if that helps you get a mental picture, you're welcome. So Sheriff pops up because why wouldn't you need another antagonist? And so
he's
does,
the worst. I want to just say like really quick, they really just go out of their way to make him like the
he's
worst.
Very unlikable. Yeah.
Which is just interesting because like,
well, he's the big swinging dick in a small town, and, you know, the guy that doesn't realize just how small his pond is, which, if you grew up in a small town like I did, you totally know that's a thing.
But they make him, like, a horrible father, a horrible husband,
a horrible...
He gets no
redemption whatsoever.
No, he's nothing.
But I think there's a reason for that, is because you have to not feel bad.
Yeah.
And Lacey's there, too.
Lacey had been held captive, though. It's important.
Where was she?
By Ball.
Wait, when? Oh, in the
asylum, whatever you want to call it.
Because holy shit, Lacey's a deadite.
Yep.
Which is a drag, because I was like, oh shit, I thought she and Linda would be happy, because like, dad's going to be a jerk and dead. So Lacey kills a cop, like the backup the sheriff brought, if I remember right. She kills that cop and runs off. Sheriff and Kelly run off to find her. She tricks the sheriff with the old deadite trick of like, help me, I'm so scared, I'm better, but I need your help. And then that lets her basically go full on predator and rip his head and spine out. So she does like the, what is it? It's not the Sub-Zero finisher in Mortal Kombat. Who does the scorpion that rips off your head with the spinal column dangling?
Might be Scorpion.
It's been a while. So she does that. Meanwhile, Kelly ties her up in the fire hose and just splatters her brains with an automatic and kills her. And then as Kelly's running off, we see creepy straitjacket inmate Ash show up in the distance behind her. And so it's Ash in kind of a version of his normal gear with like the belts with the chainsaw and everything, except he's wearing like a modified straitjacket. Pablo and Ruby find the dead security guard named Reg that Ash had thought was Pablo in his vision.
Was hung.
He's hung in a closet or some shit. So it's like, okay, we're starting to see evidence that you know, there's some weirdness going on in the real world compared to the visions.
And this is... I had a note that in this episode, Ruby starts to seem way more vulnerable and human in this episode.
Yes.
She's lost her invulnerability.
Mortality.
Mortality.
Yeah. Same thing.
They've already, like, addressed that, but in this episode, it really starts becoming
a
thing.
She starts being concerned.
Yeah, she starts being concerned about everything and everyone, and also, like, just she has no strength. Like, she just is falling apart, basically.
Yeah, because, like, everything's gone wrong. Ball is her greatest, like, weakness slash foe.
Yeah.
And she's had to kill all of her children. Without the book, she knows they're fucked, and she's just kind of crumbling to pieces, because normally she would just be, like, confident and strident and whoop mm-hmm. ass, because she knew she had nothing to lose. And the idea of being vulnerable for maybe the first time kind of rocks her to her core.
And then this is where I think this happens, when she's talking to Pablo about what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And what he wants, did you write down too?
No.
He wrote down that he would like to open a food truck.
Mm-hmm. I know, that's right, because you were writing it down.
I was
like,
so
good,
obsessed
you get to do this one. Yep.
Because he wants to open a food truck that is also a computer repair shop. And it's going to be called Carlitos Fish and Chips. Like chips from a computer.
Yeah.
I don't really understand where Carlitos came from.
I think he says it's like a relative or something.
But... I'm super into that. Like, I don't know how I didn't catch this the first time we watched it. I just wasn't paying attention or something.
It's a kind of throwaway joke.
But, oh my God, I'm so into that. And when he said it with such, like, earnest, I was like, oh my God,
which, again,
yes.
is to the actor.
Yeah.
Like, Pablo is so genuine and sincere. And also, that is such a Pablo-sized dream.
Yeah.
If you, what would you want to do? I want a food truck. Really? That's it? Yeah, food truck. Oh. Poor little thing. Like, this world is too big for you.
Yes,
you know, like,
he's the best.
He's so good. I love Pablo. I want a teddy bear of Pablo.
He's so good. He's I love him.
And Ruby, at this point, has to tell Pablo that he may die no matter what.
Yep.
Which is also real rough. And, you know, Pablo, to his credit, has the testicular fortitude to keep going. Like, Pablo...
Well, she says, don't... I'm not supposed to lie or something.
Something like that, yeah. But, like, you know, Pablo is the dude who's just like, I'm good. Pablo always does his duty.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's one of the things, is he's solid always. You know, he's terrified, but he's solid. So Kelly finds the weird inmate that Ash thought was Kelly, and it is just like a weird junkie tucked away in a room.
She's like, she could basically be a PSA for, like, why you don't do drugs.
She's the meth person.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Like, she is...
I don't know if where you live, dear listener, they have a lot of billboards about meth. We have a lot of them up here. It's gross.
Yes, it's not good.
Asylum Ash, which is what I've started calling him at this point, now that he's in the new uniform, shows up. And what I love about this is that Asylum Ash is the ashy slashy everyone thought Ash was. This yes. is what, this is what it would be like if you made a movie where, Ash was the Jason or the Leatherface in a movie. Oh, it's a guy with a shotgun and a chainsaw arm, and he stalks you and kills you. Because Ash does the horror villain slow stalk and the creepy shit, and he finds you no matter where you're hiding, and he's, you know, like, just ready. And he's actually pretty intimidating. And Bruce Campbell does a huge 180
mm-hmm.
in characterization, where he is grim and focused. Yeah. You know, Bruce Campbell's actually a very good actor.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing all the slapsticky stuff here because he's supposed to.
He has
Deuter can
deadpan,
act, you know,
like,
yeah,
complete,
and he is
no
just
emotion.
Grim and ferocious. And, like, it's really like, oh shit, this is the slasher movie that everyone in that town believed happened, that we all know wasn't what happened, but it's like, oh my God, this is what they were afraid of.
Yeah.
Is this guy.
Well, that's what Ball had to convince him that he
was. Yeah. Yeah. And it's really fascinating to actually see it, like, visually occur. So, like, I fucking loved that bit.
I also think it's important that they put him in a different costume.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it is very distinct that it's not, like, Ash anymore.
It is a little close to a Freddy Krueger sweater.
It is.
Which I really like, too, because that's a good nod
yeah.
to the idea of him becoming a slasher. Kelly, meanwhile, finds Ash's room and the Ashy Slashy puppet. And supplies, she's trapped, and she and the puppet starts moving around and talking. Of course, Kelly gets the puppet on her hand and has to fight it.
It's hilarious.
It's a callback to Ash fighting his hand in the kitchen in Evil Dead 2. And she does an admirable job of it.
Yeah, it's very good.
Do you want to point out the part that always makes you cringe?
What?
When anytime there's urine,
oh.
you get upset and she gets dunked in the bedpan by
yeah.
the puppet. I don't know. Because, like, when it happens to Ash in season one, and you're
yeah.
just like, why?
It's not
and
good.
It happens to Kelly in
I
this one.
Because that's, I also have my, there's a lot of good quotes in
there's
this
a ton.
One.
You usually seem to write down quotes, so I didn't bother usually.
I wrote down, Kelly says, or no, he says this.
Ashy Slashy Puppet?
Always bring a gun to a puppet fight.
Well, she says that.
She says
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. So she does kill the puppet. Linda shows up at that
point.
She
kills the puppet, and the puppet is just full of gore.
Oh, yeah, it explodes.
Like, completely
yeah,
full of gore.
Like, it's like seven or eight.
It's not like stuffing.
It is gore. It is seven or eight pigs worth of just like awful gunk. Linda shows up in the room. She and Kelly team up. Ash discovers Ruby and Pablo's hiding place in the closet as Asylum Ash, the stalker, and like chainsaws through it and captures Pablo, which is the whole thing they're trying to prevent. Kelly tells Linda her daughter is dead. And Linda is very mad. Not because her daughter's dead, but because she knew Kelly was lying to her.
Yeah.
And Linda shows a lot of strength, where she's like, people have never given me enough credit my whole life. You know, you were trying to protect me, you were doing that, and I was like, fuck yeah, Linda!
I wrote down, yeah, that Kelly got to deal with some of her own issues by talking about Lacey's death to Linda.
Yes, and then when Linda does the speech, and Kelly's like, let's go kick some fucking ass.
Like,
and the two of them were like,
Linda's good for Kelly.
Yeah, oh, very good for Kelly. And yeah, it's just, but I love Linda being like, people have always tried to protect me and never once thought I didn't
need
protecting.
It makes very,
especially small town life. Yeah. It's just like, oh, God damn. Like,
she's just a dumb waitress.
Exactly. No one had ever give her enough credit to be a real person. And she's like, fuck y'all.
Yeah.
I am my own person. And you're like, oh shit, son. Like, I like her a lot.
Well, that actress I've seen in other things.
I can't remember who it is, but yeah, she's in stuff. Yeah, she's excellent. And that's a moment where suddenly her character turns a corner. Not that she has not been playing that role. She's not been given anything to do yet.
No, but she's definitely...
She's just been attacked by deadites, and everybody's
the same. A couple episodes before, she's definitely been able to make... And I guess in the police station, she's been able to progress.
A little bit there. And then when she just like picks up a gun and helps Kelly defend the house, she does what she needs to instead of just screaming like we see some people do, so... But I really, really love that Linda shows some strength there. We end up with a final confrontation with Ash, Ball, Kelly, Pablo, and Linda. And Ash heads over to Pablo, who once again is trussed up like a pig, and then cuts him free. And everybody's like, what? And he's like, oh, what's up? My pet tracker plan, y'all.
He's like, yeah, you guys, we talked about the plan.
Yeah, remember how I was like, all we got to do is get all of us into a room and we can kick his ass?
What?
And they're like, are you shitting me?
And then you realize he's been playing ball
He's been playing ball the entire time. And that little glance out the window was him just double-checking it was working.
He's like, oh, God, oh, good, they're here.
And you're just like, shit, dude, he's just so Ash. And the thing is, I think Ash is, for better or worse, too dumb to be manipulated.
Yeah.
Because Ball's doing all this incredibly elaborate shit, and Ash is like...
Stubborn, constantly.
Yeah.
Stubborn.
Yeah, Ash is like, no, that's all bullshit. He just moves on. So it's fucking great. And then they're all like, fuck, it's Pet Tracker.
Yeah.
Like, so Pablo now, who has all the incantations on him, they're like, do you think maybe you learned a little Sumerian by having that entire book inside you up until this point? And he's like, probably. So Pablo starts the incantation. Ruby shows up. They're all kind of holding Ball down. Gang, including Linda, hold him down while Pablo chants. And Pablo does all this crazy shit, and there's shit flowing all over the place, back and forth between Pablo and Ball. And right before Ball explodes, he, like, slices at Pablo, and just... And everybody's covered in gunk. And they're like, fuck yeah! And Pablo just has, like, a frozen expression of, like, euphoria.
Yeah, like he won.
And then he slides apart and has been just bisected at the belly button into two halves. And you're like... Pablo, no.
It's very sad.
It is the hardest moment to watch, for me at least, for like, no, because like we talked about, like, I didn't like it when the cop from the first season died. I really liked that character. Yeah. I wanted it to go farther. I know you weren't as big of a fan, but like, I wanted to see that go. And now I really want to see where Linda goes. Like, I hope we get more of Linda, but we shouldn't.
Yeah.
If the rules stay true, she should die early in season three. But like, but it's like, God damn it, I got used to the idea of Pablo and Kelly. I don't want to lose Pablo and Kelly. So I was super upset when we lost Pablo. And I don't like being that, like, morning after Game of Thrones, I can't believe they killed Jon Snow. Like, but like, that's how I felt. I was like, oh, I'm so betrayed. You know, anyway. So Pablo's death is a big enough moment to end episode 8 on. Episode 9. We open on the Delta whipping shitties in front of Ash's house. Because that's how Ash grieves.
It is the best thing ever. Like, it is adorable because he's even grieving is adorable.
Which, again, his dad died and they hopped in the car and left.
Like, he is super grieving. He has Corpse Pablo in the passenger seat.
Which,
like,
by the way,
not
Corpse
covered.
Pablo has been, remember, we said cut in half, like, just above the waist. Yeah. So
he's
they have duct-taped
to himself
to make him, like, half the size. But it's, so he's got like his feet sticking up over his shoulder.
In the passenger seat.
It's like the parts that were cut are meeting at the bottom. He's like, it's been folded
and
like a Swiss
Army knife. Drinking and smoking.
Drinking whiskey and smoking weed.
Angel dust.
You can really taste the angel
really
dust.
I
love
whipping
that there apparently
shitties.
Is no drug Ash won't do.
No.
He is just, which again, though, if you think about how traumatic his life has been, all he's doing is escaping because he knows his time is limited. And so he's just like, fuck it. I just want to escape.
But it is astounding. He's crying the entire time, too.
It's sobbing.
Like, it is the best and weirdest mourning ritual.
It's really great.
Also, the Delta's completely working again.
Well, he said they're going to buff it out. And apparently in the 6 hours overnight, someone was able to do that. It's just like their clothes regenerate. The Delta regenerates.
It's not like I'm not angry.
Again, the Delta is one of the heroes.
It is.
Meanwhile, Ruby and Kelly are sitting on the porch, also lamenting everything, trying to figure out what the fuck to do. Ash says he wishes he could go back in time and fix it, and like...
Oh my god, wait. Before we get to that...
sure.
I also forgot that, showing that he is very much Pablo's buddy and his and super in pain, he corrects himself.
Yes.
Because he says he calls him Mexican.
My little Mexican buddy.
And he's like, no, I mean my little Honduran Mexican buddy.
I was going to mention that too. I forgot. Thank you.
And it's amazing because it's like, it's
the first time.
So horrible because he is still horrible, yep. But he's trying and you can tell
he's
trying.
Only trying for Pablo.
Yeah, and he's only trying for Pablo. And the fact that he does that was just like amazing.
It is the cutest thing. So Ash says he wishes he could go back in time and all that, and then like Pablo turns into a spoopy ghost next to him and tells him, like, why don't you just do that? And he's like, what? Just go back in time, you know, like if you go back in time, what would you do? And he's like, I'd go back and never pick up that goddamn book in the first place. And he's like, so do it. And he goes, hey, yeah, I went back in time one time. I went back to the Middle Ages. That is our first direct reference to Army of Darkness.
Yep.
Because they did not have the rights to reference Army of Darkness in season one. Season two, they were able to negotiate that, which is why up until now, every film clip we've seen in a flashback, and I think they still never show Army of Darkness in a film clip.
Yeah, I don't
theoretically,
think
they have the rights to at least talk about it, maybe not show it. But every film clip we've ever seen is from Evil Dead 1 and 2, which they were able to get before they started. So that is different about season two. That may come into more play as we go on with season three now. We don't know. But that is the first time we directly reference it. Although the very fact that Ash has a chainsaw hand and some of that stuff is kind of a thing, you know, or like the chainsaw hand is Evil Dead 2. But the, the power glove hand, it's a callback,
it's a
but
callback.
It's not the same
it isn't
one.
It's the same.
So like
it's
there's
not-
definitely.
It's not metal, so it is not the same.
Yeah, they allude to things and they're never saying it, but this is the first time they just say a thing that's happened.
Yeah.
So that I just was like, whee! Because that opens up the world more for me. Again, breathing through my mouth as we watched it. So the gang and Pablo's body go all DeLorean on us and come to a stop in 1982. Which is so good, because everything that could happen in 1982 is happening on that street corner. There's a car wash.
Like cheerleaders.
There's like every...
There's some balloons.
Car
places.
That looks exactly like Ashes
Friday
driving
the
around.
13th and something
and Poltergeist,
else.
And Poltergeist and Friday the 13th Part 3 are playing at the Cineplex. Put that down in the margins.
Also, they arrive to Don't Stop Believing, which I thought was like the
so
most perfect
good.
Song for
so
them to
good.
Do.
I meant to write that down. I did. And then they come to a screeching halt, and Ash is like, yeah. And then Ruby kind of explains it to Kelly. And Ash goes, man, I know the sports scores for the next 30 years.
Yeah, very
we can make it. And it's like the most, not what's the opposite of oblique? Just like headbutt reference to Back to the Future is what he does. And I love that. It's so good that they do that because you have to, right?
And then you get the.
And you get the freaked out businessman.
Who then becomes your drunk.
Yeah, he's the guy who's
actor.
Like, whoa, and Ash is like, here you go, and he hands him a bottle of whiskey and goes, this will help you forget that you just saw a car appear out of thin air. And he's like, no, because of my family history, I shouldn't. He goes, nah, come on, man, it'll help you. And then they, like, peel out, and the guy just unscrews the cap and takes a drink, and that's the hobo we saw when they first get back to Elk Grove that says, you ruined my life. He did. He truly got the guy to be an alcoholic in 1982.
And horrible.
And yeah, it's the worst, but like that's what Ash does. Like you said, he destroys everyone around him. And like it doesn't have to be they get killed by deadites. He just is a wreck. Gang heads to the cabin.
in the most.
Because the plan is to go back in time.
Evil Dead camera shots ever.
Very much, yeah.
It's the pan over car driving down forest path.
It's
that's just
damn
all it
near
is. Like, I honestly
shot
want
shot.
To look at and see if it is shot for shot.
I mean, I can't imagine they went to the effort of going to the exact road. Like, it just
it's
seems
not
unlikely.
Exact, but I, it
but
seems
it's
like
the
it
same
almost...
idea, yeah. It's great. It's a glorious thing if you're, like, one of the fans. Because you'll get it. If not, it just is.
Well, I'm not even like as big a fan of you, but I still appreciate those camera angles.
For sure, yeah. Well, because it's also just shot in a way that most people wouldn't do because it was shot by a first-time filmmaker.
Yeah.
So you'll do things that people go, why would you put that in your movie? And it's like, oh, The Shining fucking did it.
Yeah.
Like, we can do what we want. So the gang heads to the cabin. They put Pablo's body in the trunk and leave him a note that's just like... Pablo,
you're dead.
No. If you, yeah, Pablo, we're going to the cabin to get the book.
No, we're in the past.
We're in the past. Yeah, we're in the past. We're going to the cabin to get the book. If you can read this, you're alive. P.S.
You were
dead.
And Kelly's like apostrophe. Like, the you're is.
So they start to walk towards the cabin, and the unseen force shows up, and Ash is like, "Wait a minute, I haven't read from the book yet." So they all run. They get split up, of course.
Scattered, yeah.
Ash gets to the cabin alone and hides in the rafters from the unseen force. It retreats in the exact same way it does in Evil Dead 2, where it runs into the room, looks around, and then backs out.
Yeah,
that's it, almost
no
shot
one, yeah.
for shot. Ash, of course, falls down. Thud. I have a lot of a la and then pick a movie in my next couple pages worth of notes because there's so much that is a direct homage to other shots. So I'll point those out when we get to them. So meanwhile, Ruby and Kelly are just kind of wandering through the woods, pissed off that once again, like, the plan's gone to hell because Ash disappeared as soon as they got somewhere. Ash steps on a nail in the street, which the funny thing about that, though, which only occurred to me this time watching it, I think that's the same nail that Hiker Chick steps on in season one, which didn't occur to me until this time. Of, like, he's like, ah, fuck. And it's like, that nail has been there that whole time, and then that chick goes, poof! As all the nails are coming out of everything, and it's like, oh my god, that's hilarious that they would do a callback to that, because no one steps on a nail like that in the movies that I recall.
It's
just like, oh, what a funny bit to call back to your season one. And Ash steps on the nail, and his leg starts to go bad, the way his hand starts to go bad. And so he pulls up his pants, and he's just like, oh no. And he sees the chainsaw, and he reaches for it, he throws his leg up on the table, starts with the chainsaw, and goes, ah, there's gotta be a better way.
And then assumes it's going to be like a snake bite and sucks the poison out.
PSA, that's not how snake bites work. No. You can't actually suck the poison out of a snake bite, but he sucks the gunk.
And my favorite thing is that he says, too salty, which to me implies that at some point he thought maybe it wasn't going to be that bad.
Or he's swallowed enough of this bullshit that, like, he's got a preference now for
like,
what it tastes
this
like.
This is too salty. And I'm like, that's weird to say.
Yeah. So he sucks out the evil.
But he
which, of course, then he accidentally
out,
swallows it, like, forces it right on his throat, and then it's like, and doing a little thing. So essentially you end up with him in the kitchen, and so he gets in his stomach and is doing the little, like from Army of Darkness when he's in the windmill, and then he's in the kitchen essentially fighting himself a la Evil Dead 2. You do the tea kettle gag.
He swallows some pepper first.
Swallows some pepper and some Tabasco.
Yeah.
And then does the tea kettle gag from Army of Darkness. But instead of having that, like, kill the thing...
He vomits up, like...
It, like, forces it up. And so, like, yanks, like, a leg...
Which is super gross.
Attached to, like, a weird body with an extra eye on its back.
I love that little baby.
I love that goofy little thing.
I wrote, love his gross baby.
Yeah.
It's like
and it's
a
like,
little...
Fuck you, motherfucker!
Yeah,
he just
it
smashes it with a cast iron skillet. It is not happy to be alive.
It is... Yeah, it is an ugly... This seat... No. Is it just this season? There are a lot of things with eyes in this.
In weird places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the best parts of Army of Darkness is when he gets that eye in his shoulder. And it eventually becomes his clone.
With eyes.
Oh, coming up in a little bit. Yeah.
But even before, like, the eyes are what, when he's in the Institute, that's how he knows it's Ball. Or not Ball. What? Someone's eyes shift. And that's how they know they're not who they are.
Shit. I know what you mean now, and I can't think of who. Because, there's a brief moment...
Like, they go between... But you know what I think there's a
one
lot
of them, like, flashes
eyes.
Into, like, Lucy Liu's eyes. Not Lucy Liu. Lucy Lawless's eyes flash to Balls or something, or vice versa.
Yeah, something weird happens.
Lucy Liu.
And I feel like in something else, there's also... Anyways, eyes.
So he smashes his little abomination baby with a skillet. And then Ash hears Henrietta in the cellar. And, you know, from the movies, Henrietta to me is like the heavy hitter monster out of the, all three of the trilogy. Like, that's the coolest goddamn monster. But this is just a little old lady. But the fact that you hear Henrietta, for me, was like a goosebump moment of like, oh shit, Henrietta's down there. That's amazing. So, yeah, he heads down the cellar. But before he does, because it's Henrietta, he gets all ready, puts on his chainsaw, chugs a beer, heads down to the cellar. And yeah, he finds Henrietta, little old lady Henrietta, in the back of the cellar, chained to the wall. And she begs to be released, saying Professor Nobby has been abusing her and keeping her trapped down there because he found this demonic book.
Yeah.
And he's gone crazy and evil, and he's beating her and terrible, and help release her before he gets back. Yada, yada, yada.
And he's not sure.
And Ash is like,
questioning.
Punches her in the face.
Yeah.
Punches. It just, much basically, like the dinner the in the mom, first season with the mom. Yeah, just keeps belting her in the face. And, you know, in the beginning, in the season one, he's like, oh, I'm glad she changed. That was about to get real awkward. Except Henrietta doesn't change. She's just belting this woman in the face, trying to get her to turn into a deadite.
But he's still not sure.
And he's like, all right, well, cool. And then Nobby shows up with a co-ed.
Yep.
And he's like, eep. So he grabs the keys and goes and hides in the basement as Nobby comes down. Dude, by the way, it looks like Jonathan Katz, which I thought was really distracting.
Yes, yes, he does. Now that you mentioned that.
Yeah. So Nobby and the co-ed, and I think they say her name's Tracy. I didn't know it at first. And
Tanya.
Tanya, whatever it is. But I was like, she's basically just meant to be like a co-ed from a horror movie. They head down the basement. Ash hides. She walks into the room and just steps in a bear trap.
What is even? Like, I understand that he would know
it's
where
not
to not
walk. It's
not
a clever trap.
No, but Ash has just been in that room for like 10 minutes. Stumbled in that room and...
No, it's a little... It's movie.
Yeah.
It's because movie. So she steps in a bear trap.
A bear trap that Professor Nobby clearly wanted her to step on.
Oh, yeah. It's there for that reason. But you're counting... you're basing your entire plan on a single football. Yeah. That's a bold move. Not even in the dark.
No.
Like, what?
All the lights are on.
Yeah. So she gets caught in the bear trap, which lets Nobby monologue. And he starts saying about how he found the book on a most recent expedition. All the shit we know from, like, the tape recorders and Evil Dead. And Ash is like, uh-oh, this is bad. He's now trapping a second person. And just as Ash unclicks the lock on Henrietta, he goes, and then it possessed my wife. And I had it, and you're like, Ash looks and he's like, oh, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And he turns back and he's just holding the chains and Henrietta's gone. And I'm like, yes, I know where this is going. So Henrietta goes all deadite, which just basically gives her like the Cheryl deadite treatment. She, like, her eyes get white and she's got the makeup. And she's running around as an old woman in her dress, doing her shit. Meanwhile, Ruby and Kelly have an encounter with the trees.
Which, the rape tree has turned into a whipping
nom,
and
nom,
eating
nom
tree.
Yeah.
So I was kind of disappointed. I was like, what?
Because they do reference Cheryl getting violated by a tree
until
she's dead, when Ash talks to dead-eyed Cheryl. So, like, they acknowledge, like, all the events of the films and stuff. And so, like, all of a sudden, like, once the book is brought back and Henrietta goes dead-eyed, like, the forest wakes up, and it's the vines.
And the tree's a giant eyeball.
And then the tree kind of, like, wakes up, but instead of trying to rape them, it's going to devour them, and it has one big eye in the trunk.
One big eye. And this is also... I found it hilarious. Kelly's fighting the tree, and then she breaks off a branch and hands it to Ruby, and it's like, stab it in the eye! But before she could do that, she had to take her coat off.
It's weird, because you can tell that this is edited very poorly, because I was noticing that, too. Because there's a bit where the tree branches are wrapped around her coat on her arms.
Yeah.
So squirming out of the coat makes sense. And so she grabs her coat and starts to take it off. And they cut to another shot where there's nothing on her arms.
Yeah.
And they cut back and she finishes taking off the coat. And it's like, your continuity is fucked.
Yeah,
it looks pointless.
It was
but
really...
But because she's not wearing the coat for the rest of the episode, they had to just leave that hat, because it is a very bad continuity error.
Yeah, it was.
There must have been something wrong with the shots that showed why she was using that to slip away from the tree, and it just doesn't work.
And I wasn't trying to be petty, but like, that scene was really jarring to me.
I didn't notice it the first time we watched it, but it was very jarring this time. I agree. Yeah, there's a, like, I have to assume that whatever, something was wrong with the takes.
Yeah.
Maybe they couldn't get the special effects to look good. And it's like, oh shit, this looks like garbage when it's wrapping around her. We can't show it in close ups. We have the one hint of it. And then just kind of, we have to show her get it off, otherwise why is it gone? And it's just, it's put together in like three awkward shots.
Which makes it look like her just taking her coat off because she's like, warm,
she's like,
or something.
It's too warm. Yeah. I'm being eaten by a tray.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it does not make sense, but you could see why they were trying to go.
Yeah, she was trying to
squirm out. They were trying to go for a thing,
yeah,
but it just, it doesn't pay off. So that's too bad, because I noticed it this time, too. But again, that's second viewing, so...
Yep.
But, you know, it's, for some people, that'll be the thing they notice right away. Ruby's able to kill the tree by stabbing it in the eye. Ash tries to free the co-ed, and at that point, Henrietta goes all Super Saiyan, which makes her basically look like Henrietta from Evil Dead 2 when they first find her in the basement.
Also, when he tries to free the co-ed from the bear trap, it's basically, if any of you have seen Severance, where it's like the same idiot, like, trying to get a bear trap off anyone, where you just keep making it, you just make it worse.
Someone who's just not even helping.
He's just, like, trying to kind of pull it off.
He's got one hand!
And he's one hand.
Like, he needs her to help.
And it keeps, like, reclosing on her leg, and I'm just like...
And all she does is keep screaming, and finds, like, look, your shouting is not helping.
Yeah.
And I was like, good for you, Ash, because it's not. She could also be trying to open the damn thing.
These movies have taught me, this movie and TV show have taught me, just never try with a bear trap. Just, like, just live your life.
Until you have a pry bar, you're just yeah.
That's your life now.
So... Henry goes all Super Saiyan and is in the form we are introduced to her in Evil Dead 2, which, as my friend, when I watched this movie as a like middle schooler, referred to as the Sausage Lady, because she's just covered in like lumpy gunk. And so now she looks like we saw her originally.
She also super looks like Ted Raimi, though.
She does. In the initial movie, I don't think she looks as much like Ted Raimi. Although I don't really know what Ted Raimi looks like as well at that age.
That's fair.
Sure, it's just like, yeah, it's Ted Raimi.
Yeah.
Which I should say is Ted Raimi again.
Yeah.
Ted Raimi did play Henrietta in the original movie, especially because as they got to the point where they're shooting the Henrietta scenes toward the end of production, everyone quit. All the actors, everybody fucking quit that movie because it was taking forever. It was uncomfortable, it was shitty, it was awful, it was hot. And so Ted was playing all the fake Shemps. He's doing everything where you had to have someone else around or a body getting thrown. So Ted was like every character. And he was also Henrietta, which is the most miserable thing because it was this huge rubber latex suit. That might be a contradiction. But a huge suit, and it was just awful and weighed a ton and had... just did not breathe. So there's a shot in Evil Dead when Henrietta is on the wires spinning around above the room going, wah! And you can see from, like, behind his thigh about a gallon of sweat pour out of a hole in the costume. Like, it's not meant to be focused on. It's not a part of the effect. It's just, you'll as it's spinning, all of a sudden you see, like, what looks like someone just popping a balloon go poof out of the costume. And it is all sweat from Ted from being in that damn suit. So for Ted to come back and reprise the role of Henrietta is a special treat if you're a fan of the series, and he does. But it does look a bit Ted once she monsters out like this, which is adorable and great. Nobi picks up the book and fucks off, and locks them all in the setter while he's doing it. And Henrietta kind of stumbles toward them and is like, I'm going to get you. And that's how our penultimate episode ends, which leads us to the finale of season 2. Which picks up basically right where we left off. Henrietta's advancing on Ash and the co-head in the basement. Cellar. Ash shoots her a couple times, and she just spits out all the buckshot.
That's really cool.
I really liked that. I thought that was really, really fun. Because for a second there, the co-head is given a little bit of hope, because she has no idea what the fuck is going on. And then just, no. She just spits out all the buckshot. And then co-head gets pulled through the stairs that she's sitting on. And Nobi gets out to his little VW bug, sits down, and explodes.
Yeah,
and
I can only assume it explodes.
Red. He just, and just everything is just splattered. So, like, yeah, he clearly got just killed by some deadites, something or other. Ash manages to make it upstairs, at which point Ruby shows up with the book.
You forgot about... Isn't Henrietta has to turn into a snake?
Not yet. I don't think. Did she already? I thought it was not until he goes back in the cellar.
Oh.
I think it's when he goes back. Because I had Ash going up and sees Ruby with the book. And then you're like, that's weird. Ruby didn't look like that a second ago. Ruby had pink hair. And Ash is like, Ruby, good. And he gets yanked back down in the cellar. And then Henrietta's like, I don't do this for everybody on the first date or some shit.
Yeah.
And goes all monkey face with long neck from the end of Evil Dead 2, which again is why Henrietta's my favorite deadite. Well, I always think monkey because in Evil Dead 2, as they're transforming, going through like the Harryhausen transformation, they have a chimp doing that like, So there's a monkey sound effect that accompanies that transformation. So I think of it as monkey face.
That makes sense.
But yeah. Well, she has a serpentine neck, and that one is just a flapper For the puppet.
Yeah.
This one, I think, has a little more articulation.
Nah, I mean, not a lot. It does.
It is still, and again, it's still done practically. You've got someone in a suit kind of going doot-doot-doot and kind of rocking back and forth, a big long neck that is very clearly being marionetted 5 feet away from the body through the slats in the floor. So, again, gives it that very old school look, matches the original films pretty well. And again, does that practical thing where you can tell they're in the room together. There's a scene in Evil Dead 2 where he's fighting Henrietta with the new head that is a very Harryhausen thing, and it's clearly rotoscoped in. And Ash is doing the thing where he's got this big monkey head, and he has to, like, duck.
Yeah.
And then jump and swing, and you're like, you matched it up pretty well, but we can tell you guys are not in the same room. You know, it's like the way they did the old Godzilla films and shit, and it's just like, it allows you to do things you can't do otherwise, but it doesn't look as good as when you just had the thing being like, wow, I'll swallow your soul, I'll swallow your soul, and it's like bobbing in front of him on its fucking string. Give me the string. The string looks better. So they do a very good job of that, at least. So now Ruby and Kelly show up. Two rubies? The hell you say? So Ash and Henrietta have a scrap, which includes forced breastfeeding.
It's disgusting beyond belief.
Horrifying. Oh, this is where she changes, because the projector starts up playing that old-timey song, which is the song from the credits of the original Evil Dead.
Yeah.
That's when she goes into her final form, which is the snaky one. That's when they fight for a little bit, and then Ash decapitates it, because when your weak point is your neck, as literally every animal's is, making that neck 6 feet long does not make you less vulnerable.
I wrote that poor defensive move. When he's fighting Snake Henrietta, there's a bunch of more, like, the Three Stooges-ish
stuff. Yeah, it goes back to some more of the splatstick stuff that they did from the movies. So Ruby and Ruby are arguing, because Ruby from 82 is still hardcore Ruby. Ruby from our era is the one that saw
how... human, basically.
Well, but, like, saw how her plans played out with Ball's influence.
And her kids wanting to kill her.
Summoning her kids, and they come back to haunt her, and then she has to kill them. And, well, actually, Ash says, yeah, we helped kill him, right? And then current Ruby's like, you what?
Yeah,
you. And it's like, oh, once again, Ash puts his foot in it. So, 82 Ruby kills modern Ruby. Oh, nope, not quite. Like, they have a great death scene for Ruby, where she kind of like... and they're sad.
And Ash tries to close her eyes, and she's like, I was just... I'm
not dead, you idiot. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. This is a weird long pause. Which is great. And then she's like, all right, run. I'll hold her off as long as I can. And so they run out, and as they're fleeing, Ash's chainsaw hand is just like, ah, what the fuck? And he takes it off, and his hand is regrown. And he's like, what the fuck? And
he's like, if only Pablo was here to see this.
Kelly's like, it worked. We changed history. And then thump, thump, thump from the trunk. Pablo's alive! And the gang hops in the classic and takes off.
Drives, and Pablo's a dick.
Supplies Pablo's ball.
Because what does Pablo say? Oh, like, they're like, we have to get back to...
Back to the future. They literally say, back to the future.
And then Pablo's like, man, what if I don't want to help you? And they're like, I'm sorry.
Why
I'm sorry,
would you not
what?
Want to?
You're Pablo. You want to help all of us. And he's like, man, maybe I don't want to. And they're like, And then he's Ball.
Yep. And then they pull over, and then Ball and Ruby knock out everybody, and they're back in the cabin. Ball and Ruby are just making more spawn, but the Necronomicon is vomiting them out this time.
Pablo obviously is not there to have their children, so...
Exactly. Which seems like the easier play to do it in the first place. So Ash challenges Ball to a fair fight. Ball agrees. Ash and Ball have a scrap.
They have a scrap fighting for the world.
Yes. Yep. Old-timey Western barroom brawl to fight for
the world. If Ash wins, all the evil goes back to hell, basically.
Yep.
Or quote-unquote hell.
Yeah.
If Ash loses, they get to have hell on Earth. And... Ruby's children get to be consumed, or get to consume Kelly, which is later implied that also she would be defiled.
Yeah, Ruby's like, it was implied. they fight, which is very similar in nature to the Ash versus Ash fight from season one. Ruby decides she's going to read from the book to give Ball an advantage.
Wait, that isn't really ever...
Doesn't really play out.
It doesn't play out.
Ball turns into Chet and then cuts off Ash's hand again. The hand runs off.
Mm-hmm.
Ball turns into Cheryl. Kelly and Ruby are fighting now. Ball turns into Brock. Ash drowns Brock in the bathtub.
Brock turns into Chainsaw.
Brock turns into Chainsaw because he was never really there. Ball shows up, says he wasn't going to honor the deal anyway. Now you have a chainsaw duel, a la Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah.
Ash and Kelly are on the ropes, but Ash distracts Ball and stabs him with his own fingernail, and then Ball's skin comes off, and the cabin starts to split in the middle, revealing, like, hell underneath. The book falls through the crack, cabin kind of collapses in flame, and then Pablo emerges from the wreckage, much like Ruby emerged from the pyre at
in
Brujo's place.
One, yeah.
Yep. Cut back to town. They're having a huge celebration of Ash defeating all the evil Deadites. Ash gives a very typical Ash speech with y'all are assholes and I'm pretty great.
Linda being his
now we're cool.
First lady.
No, yeah,
very first
like
lady looking. Yeah.
Ash and Linda smooch. And in the back of the crowd, we see...
Current Ruby. No, past
82 Ruby.
Ruby. Yeah.
With the blonde hair.
Yeah.
Kind of like look and then walk away. And that's the end of the season. And then we have our credits. And after the credits... a young girl's voice says, "Hey, look what I found," and picks up the Necronomicon from next to Nobi's car under the leaves, and then it's black. That's it. So that's our season two. Thoughts?
Well, first a thought on the... I found the last episode to be... It was too much. It was way too much. They would, like, shove the universe into one episode, which to me, like... I don't want to say it derailed the whole season, but it really had... It left not a good taste in my mouth at the end because it was just way, there was way too much going on. Like, they brought up new things to then, like, end. And I honestly thought Ash having his Star Wars, whichever it was, which episode was it, Empire, whatever, then they get the awards moment. Like, I thought that was going to be a dream because that was so unbelievable that I could not stomach that. That a town would act, that I get that they would be like, oh, okay, now we don't think you're a serial killer. But that they were going to, like, make, like, a giant image of him and, like, have a chainsaw. And, like, it was just so unbelievable that I was, like, not really sure what to do with this. And, yeah, the fact that they just introduced things and then removed things and then it just... The last episode did not work for me because it didn't... They tried, like, bringing Pablo back, having him alive, then making him bald, then bringing him back to life. It was too much.
I think it's one of the two weakest episodes of the season.
Yeah. And it sucks that it had to be the last episode, because I really think the last episode of the first season was really good, and I think the first episode of this is really good. So it's like, clearly they know how to end things, but this one didn't. And I don't know if they just really had hope that they were... Maybe they already knew they had a third season coming, but I feel like they didn't because there's a big gap.
I don't think
gap.
They did. I think there's a gap, yeah.
And so I feel like they just made, like, they answered questions, posed new questions at the end. Like, they just ended this at a weird place.
Yeah, and that was the thing we talked about after finishing it again this time, was I was wondering if what they were doing is going, we never know if we're going to get another season, so let's make sure each season is just the end if it needs to be. But there's a couple threads you could play with to pick up for another season. And then you'd have to expand more of a story, you know? Because it's like, okay, like, we went back to the original cabin at the end of the first season. And again, they talked about the idea that the first season would have just been a movie.
Yeah.
And they expanded it to a season. So, like, it makes sense. You have to go back to where it all started and end the thing. And it's like, oh, okay, well, we did all that, but he didn't do it right because it's Ash.
Yeah.
So you've got a new season. So now you got a new season, and they, once again, have to go back to where it all started. And they clearly didn't quite do it all right.
Yeah, so and now you have the Ruby thread, and then the people finding the Necronomicon again.
Yeah,
thread.
So it's like there's always room for more, but if it stops here, it is not like when a show just gets canceled out of nowhere. So I think they're just playing it safe, and I kind of like the idea that every season could just be the end if they write it that way.
And
I'm
like,
sort of okay
I
with
get
that.
That. I just,
you know,
like,
unless they get like a 2-season contract, then okay, you can do a longer story. But I'd rather them write for what they know they have than write for what they hope they get.
And I agree. I just really, as much as I might have griped about tiny things in other episodes, like the last episode really, I was disappointed in rewatching it because I think, the first time I was watching it, just to be like, ah, this is fun. This is, let's just, but I was like, as an actual show, I was like, this is disappointing to me.
I feel like the Ash ball fight is, we don't know how to end this.
Yeah. And also, so the, let's once make again,
fist
like,
fight. And it's like, we need an action beat. And it's like, okay, but you then you bring in Chet and Cheryl. And then even Kelly
has like a weird kind of fist fight with the kids and Ruby, which is dumb because all of them could kill her in an instant.
Yeah. It's just, it's a weird thing where it's like, if you're going to bring back the visions of his friends and family, like, show the whole only reason to do that is to torture him psychologically.
Which doesn't, and it's really so work brief, for it doesn't him, have time. Though. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
but
and
also
it's like,
just doesn't work for him.
Yeah. Because, like, clearly it haunts him on some level, but in the immediacy of a moment, he's fine pushing that shit aside, yeah, and just getting the job done. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it feels like it's three episodes worth of stuff put in one. But also, maybe we've done a lot of stuff to build a lot of world. Because I think the great thing this season does is a ton of world building.
It does.
But then it became like, how do we wrap this up? Ooh, they just punch each other for a while.
Yeah.
And I think that's just kind of like, we got to finish it. We have 40 minutes left. Go. And it's like, oh, shit. Like, all right. Well, if we do this and this and this, that kind of covers our bases. And we can be done. We don't see where the hand goes.
Yeah, which is another thing.
They cut his hand off again. It's clearly evil. It flips him off again,
which
just
is funny,
like Evil
because
Dead 2.
You
and
thought
it scuttles
that
under
the
couch.
Flash or the teaser at the end.
And I was remembering the teaser at season 1.
Yeah.
Is what I was thinking of, yeah. Because it's like that would make
it
sense.
It would have made sense.
Show that hand
once again,
wandering,
it's
off.
Wandering off.
Because then it's, okay, we went back in time and prevented me from ever finding the cabin. But my hand is out there.
Yeah.
My hand could find young me and fuck it up. Perfect. But then someone also finds the book. Also fine. Like, so it's like there's threads there, but it's like, and that's all, you know, maybe that'll all pay off in season 3 now that they have it. Maybe it won't. But it just seems weird to dump all that into an episode where you're trying to wrap up your loose ends.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to do the thing of someone finding the book, you're done. Just let shit resolve. You don't have to add more, like the hand, which
like I would have
maybe is a throwaway gag. And maybe it perished in the cabin. That can be totally what
that's
happened.
That's true. The cabin does explode,
but
so.
But why even show it? Just lop it off and have it go thud and be done.
Yeah.
You know, like, we already did the whole idea of the footbook going bad. We don't need to see the hand go bad again.
Yeah.
You know?
And I don't mean to harp. Like, I don't...
I think we've been sucking this show's dick pretty well, so I feel like we can harp on some things if we need to.
Like I said, like, there's a couple episodes in this one that I feel like are just not... I'm not saying this is a perfect show, but I just feel like... I guess I just really would have wished it would have ended on a little bit of a higher level for me. Like I said, I would have loved... if it just had been Ruby being the big bad at the end, 80s Ruby, it would have given her something more agency, too, in her past, if she would have just been enough of a force that they could reckon, like, have to fight with.
Because theoretically, that's your immortal Ruby.
Yeah, and so yeah. She still would have been a badass, but to bring, I guess just that was the thing, like, bringing Ball back, like, that was just kind of
And she talks about
weird.
How that was the force that always weakened her power by being his thrall, but she never seems very enthralled.
No, and it's
she
just,
seems like she's just like, oh, I was going to come do this anyway. Oh, you brought Ball with you. It's like she wasn't expecting him to be there.
No. So, it's
so
just,
like, what's
it was? It was, it was
deal?
Just very disappointing, because, like, everything else is, like, there are some really interesting, like, we've talked about the really interesting character developments that happen and blah, 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 but none of that really plays out in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, only Ash gets, like, his big hurrah at the end, even though, like, they admit that Pablo was, like, the big hero, kind of, in the first place to even attempt to kill Ball.
Yeah, within the Ghost Beaters, Pablo is the one that is the fucking hero throughout this season.
But, like, he doesn't even get, like, his little, like, moment, even if it's not in front of the crowd, he doesn't even get it with Kelly or Ash to have, like, his little moment.
We get the, like, Pablo crawling out, and they're like, yay! And then, like, that's it. We
and
don't
then
get,
it's
like,
Ash.
A... Yeah, there's no moment of them, like, sitting down and having, like, a, like, okay, we're all going to have waffles.
Which would, that would have been amazing.
That would have been perfect.
Literally, had they gone, because they've had the precedent of them going to, like, diners while they were traveling, had they just gone to the local diner or the bar and been like, this shit was fucked.
Yeah, and have Pablo be like, and or just them being like, you know, tell you what, Pablo, we're buying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, margaritas for everybody.
That would
perfect.
Be a perfect,
like,
loop around, because that's how it starts
the
in the beginning,
people.
That he has
yeah.
to... buy margaritas.
Yeah.
It just,
so,
they had so many options. They could have made this ending a lot smarter and
yeah.
more concise. And I just...
Because I feel like in season 1, going back to the cabin really, for me, was the bow.
Yeah.
And I still like going back to the cabin. I really think that's fun. I love that that's inescapable for Ash. But The Henrietta thing I still love. I think that's great. Nobi and Henrietta is interesting because that shows what we would have seen before the events of the movie.
And it makes Ash more aware that he didn't necessarily start.
Yeah.
Because he kept saying, I started it. But him seeing the cabin before they even arrived reminded him that he isn't actually the instigator of all of this.
He's just one of the victims.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love everything that happens in the basement and everything with Nobi. But, like, yeah, the stuff with Ball and Ruby just doesn't... It just feels rushed. It doesn't quite work. So, and I think we kind of touched on overall season thoughts, too, because, like, the final episode touches on the season. But it's like, yeah, I think this furthers the thing I was sort of talking about when we talked about season one, where I like where this is going. Because it's giving us the real-world version of Ash, where he has to live in a world where he can't be his crazy cartoon self. Because you gotta fucking buy gas.
Yeah.
And when he's gonna do that for a split second and then run back off on an adventure, that's funny and wild. But like I said, I think before, you don't wanna live next to Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
You can't handle that shit all the time. No one can be that all the time. And that's how Ash has coped, because that's what he's been doing. He's been going, going, and going to stay away from all of his problems. And now he's at a point where he could actually settle down. And like he's gotta learn to just be a regular guy.
And, which would be interesting to see how that plays out. Or if it plays out.
Because we could mellow him down. Because even Ash from Evil Dead 2, despite the fact that I think that's where he cracks and goes completely insane, which is why he is the way he is for the rest of the stuff we've watched. When the other folks show up at the cabin, he's off, but he is still able to have a rational conversation with people that doesn't have to have a quip in every line. He's able to say, look, we got to do this to be safe. We need
Which
to go here.
Not
we need to do that.
Possible anymore.
And he can only do it through jokes. He cannot deal with the real world on its own terms anymore because he's just been so completely destroyed psychologically. And like watching that kind of wind back a little could be interesting because a competent but still funny Ash, picture Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Could be interesting too.
I can't imagine it happening, though.
Like, I don't think they will, because I don't think the fans would allow for it. And that might not be the story they're interested in telling.
Exactly.
You know, and that's fine. Like, it's not my story to tell. It's their story to tell. It's my story to watch or not watch as I see fit. But the thing is, I'll watch it if he's still bonkers. As long as it's a good story, I'll watch that. But it just is interesting that they're putting him in the position where he might have to kind of tone it down.
And if they, like, I'm fine with he doesn't reach whatever... I just really want Pablo and Kelly to reach whatever they need to reach.
I would like to see them... Because graduate from Ash.
They're both realizing that they are strong enough on their own and in their own ways.
Pablo will need more convincing. Kelly, I think, is starting to get there.
And I hope, like, if they decide to keep Ash in that town, that Linda ends up helping somehow, maybe. Or, I don't know. I would like to see more... If Ash is not going to have character development, which he has, I'm not saying that in season two he didn't.
Right, but if they're not going to go for like
If they're not going to go for major, then I at least want the supporting cast to get some more of their development that they're clearly on the path to. And I think we've been very... words are failing me. We've been something. Their supporting cast has had a lot of development and is a very strong cast.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. As characters and as actors. So if they get their own development and their story arc to be strong, then it'll make it a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I would love, like you said, to have Ash somehow have a development, but I have a feeling that you're right, that because the fans are never going to actually give him a wife and, you know, like
the fact that the movie
home.
Everybody quotes is Army of Darkness means
people
are probably not primed to see Ash change from that. But they didn't know he was going to be that when they liked Evil Dead.
True.
So who knows? You know, I mean, I don't want to assume
and
the worst
correct.
Of people.
Maybe they're... But
if they tell it well, people might go there.
The season two ends with you getting the implication that he's going to become a family... What, in essence, a family
quote,
man.
Unquote, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what season three does. I thought season two overall... I had mixed feelings. I felt like... Season one was so cohesive as a thing, like, in which makes sense if it was supposed to be a movie. Like, everything was so cohesive.
And you only had, like, one episode that felt like true filler.
Yeah, but it, like, flowed pretty nicely and keeping the tone the same pretty nicely. And this one I felt like was kind of all over the place at times.
Well, you said you learned, too, that season two had a different team of writers.
Yes.
So the idea that they sat down with a writer's room to do this one, as opposed to just fleshing out a script, which would still have a writer's room.
Yeah.
But like, instead of going, okay, here's our arc, fill it in. Now they had to sit down and go, what's our arc?
Because,
and then figure it out.
Because I think, as much as I enjoyed some of the car stuff, the car was very like a filler thing. It didn't further the story. It didn't really do anything.
Well, because otherwise all you need is Deadites show up in Jacksonville. They go to, Elk Grove. They pick up Ruby. They go to the cabin. It's three episodes.
No, and I get
that. So, like, but that's what I'm saying. That's the challenge. Is like, what do we put in between? But, and so, like, the asylum's pointless, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everything that is not...
But the asylum at least had more character development happen in it.
I like those episodes better.
Yeah.
But, like, they're also
pointless. And I'm not saying, like, there's nothing wrong with... But I just... To me, it was such a weird... Between, like, you could tell there are very much two-part episodes in this.
Very much, yeah. Most episodes felt like two-part episodes.
Yeah, instead of, like, a season, it felt like a series of two-part episodes.
And that's where I said it's like a Buffy thing, or, for me, Charmed, where you have an overarching bad, but you're going to do little Monster of the Week type stuff. The car is the bad guy. The asylum is the bad guy.
And I enjoyed it, but to me, like, I guess...
It's an interesting...
It's not so dumb to say, like, the taste in my mouth, but, like, at the end, it just didn't feel... I felt very satisfied at the end of the first season. Like, I was like, oh, this is, like, just... It played like a movie. It was all super easy to digest and everything. And I'm like, this was kind of all over the place, where some episodes I clearly... Like, looking at my notes, I clearly was just, like, not interested in the episode as much, so I didn't have as much to say. And it's more apparent to me upon second viewing that some of the episodes were just clearly just not... Which is completely normal in any... TV show, but I think it's a little bit more apparent when there's only 10 episodes of a half an hour show.
Yeah.
When you have an episode that doesn't stand up, it's way more apparent.
Yeah, and it's potentially indicative, though, like we said, of maybe the direction they're going. If it's going to become Monster of the Week, Buffy, correct, then this is kind of what that would look like. And I don't want 10 seasons of this.
Yeah.
I want 4 seasons that have stronger arcs that resolve this whole thing. And, you know, there's probably some temptation to never quite shut the door on this universe, but fucking Bruce Campbell's in his 60s.
Yeah.
You know what? If you can get season 3 and have a really good season, and if you're lucky enough to get to season 4, write the final chapter on Ash and just be done forever. That would be awesome. I think it'd be really, really cool if they got to finish it on their terms, you know? And maybe Raimi pops back in and directs the finale like he directed the pilot. That'd be cool. But, like, they've potentially got the opportunity to do a career of a character that spans 30 years and truly end it on their own terms. I think that'd be neat. So I would hope they'd go for more story. And the thing is, I'm not worried about the gore and the silliness. That's taken care of.
Yeah.
I'd love to see them add a story that gives us a conclusion to this character. And we may not all be satisfied with it, because who knows what that might be. And I might hate it even. Who knows? But like, it would be interesting to see them be that bold and just finally be done. And, you know, like, yep, and if that's it, that's it. Like, whatever that looks like, it'd be an interesting thing to do for one of the most bizarre franchises, I think. You know, this and, like, Phantasm are, like, two of the most insane franchises of all time to me.
Yeah, why the Phantasm?
Where how do they manage to get made in the first place, much less sporadically keep popping up every 10 to 20 years in some new incarnation?
Didn't the video game come out like 10 years after
the Army?
The
video game was
PS1. Oh, was it?
Yeah, so it was...
I thought it was like later than PS1.
I mean, but it was maybe PS2, but it was, it was a long time. Like,
after Army of Darkness.
Yeah, because I would have been like middle school for Army of Darkness. That was 92, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't
the
like
the game
it was
would
even...
have been late 90s, early 2000s. So like, there's gaps. And then you got like occasionally a comic book pops up. And then you get the remake, and that rekindles some interest, and then you get, like, it's just, like, this managed, like, there's huge gaps in, like, the Phantasm series.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing
that's
thinking
horrifying,
of.
Yeah.
But, like, but somehow, like, there's enough love among a community to make this sort of keep clinging to life, and, like, what a cool thing to put to bed, if you can, you know? So, like, I would love to see that, which is perhaps a little macabre to say, but it's a neat opportunity.
No, I mean, you definitely would like to see something, like, I would love any kind of fandom I have to have a good ending. Like, that's what I want most of all, is like, I mean, we've talked about, Matt and I read comics, and I have a lot of comics that I want to share with him, and I usually preface some of them by saying, like, well, so-and-so just stopped writing it.
After issue 7.
So there's just no
ending.
Yeah, one
of those last ones I read, it was just like, this is a great world. And he's like, and this is all there is.
Yep.
He fucked off. Usually anything by Warren Ellis.
Yeah, it's usually Warren Ellis. I didn't want to, like, besmirch him on the podcast.
I'm gonna besmirch the shit out of him, because fuck that guy.
But, like, there is something very satisfying about things that actually have closure to them.
Being even a Brian K. Vaughan is much more satisfying, exactly. Or a fucking Garth Ennis, where you've got a story to tell. And
it might bum you out as a fan, you know? But you love that closure to have. Yeah. So I would love to have an Ash have an actual proper closure that...
It'd be really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, that said, then, for this season, I'm definitely going to say still watch
it. Oh, gosh, yes.
I think it's definitely worth a watch. Our episode-by-episode quibbles, at least from my part, I feel like, are usually kind of small. Like I said, I think there's two filler episodes. Yeah. I think episode maybe it was 5, and the finale are the weaker ones. I think it's because 5 felt the most like filler. But at the same time, like, you know, while the whole car plot is just kind of a thing to stretch 2 episodes, that's some of the best gore in the series.
It does.
It's fantastic. It's like, they give you stuff to like.
It's not like it's dumb. Or it is dumb. It's not like it's, boring or...
No, you're still cheering on your couch and laughing.
I think most of my nitpicky things are just that they're nitpicky and tiny, mm-hmm. that I noticed upon rewatching.
Yeah.
But...
And I feel like the same way. Like, and the, you know, there's a couple things we legitimately brought up that were like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And like, a couple of them just don't, you know, like the coat thing.
But like the car thing, we realized,
Why can't
I talk?
We solved the car. Oh, no. Yeah. Did I have a stroke? Maybe we should get the insurance to check us out of that car accident.
So, I would agree. I think it's definitely worth the watch. There are some... The good definitely 100% outweighs the bad. And that's why I said, like, mine are nitpicky things. And let us know if you've watched it, what you thought about the ending.
Yeah, I would love to get more feedback.
Honestly, when I'm not listening to myself talk, I seem like I'm being a big giant bitch about the ending. But it just, I guess it also is like my expectations. I just wanted more is the thing. I wanted that more better. I don't want more, because problem is there was too much.
One of the things I love about this is it's only 10 episodes. They're only a half hour. That's perfect for this.
It is. This is like the easiest thing for anyone to binge. Like,
it is
like
popcorn. Matt's
like
best.
It was, what's 5 hours? Yeah, it's 5 hours.
It's 5 hours.
If that, even though, because they're not even full half hour.
They're like 28 minutes or something. So like, yeah, we watched it in 2 nights to rewatch
thing
it.
To binge.
It's super simple. So yeah, I love everything they're doing in general. There's little things that I'll go, meh, and that's, but I think it's in general kind of flavor stuff.
Well, I think,
and then part of that too is just I have my own baggage. Obviously, I'm a fucking dork for this series.
Yeah.
And so I know what I hope for and what I expect, what I'd like to see, but that's not fair because I don't get to have that. That's insane. Yeah. You know, and that, duh. Like, hey, Star Wars fans, take note. You don't get to have what you want. You get to have what they give you, and you can like it or not, and that's fine. But like, so yeah, some of the things where I'm like, it's just because it's not the Ash I liked mm-hmm. best, because I think there are 3 from the movies, mm-hmm. and I got my favorite, and that's fine, but it's not up to them to give me my favorite. It's up to them to give me the one they want to write. Yes. So, but I still think they gave us a good one.
Yes.
So, on that note, we've been going way long.
We like talking.
We do. So, we will, in lieu of taking a break before we exit, we'll just wrap up now. So, yeah, give it a watch.
Yes.
Find us on the Facebook, the Instagram, the website, the iTunes, all that shit. Check in, comment, weigh in. We love hearing from you guys. Thank you, everyone that likes and comments and shares everything. Tell a friend if you think they like the podcast, because that is how we get new listeners. We appreciate anyone that you turn on to the show. Pick your favorite episode, have them listen to that one, see if they like it too. And now that we are back on iTunes, if you want to give us a rating or review, that's dope. We'd appreciate it. And anything else we have to make sure we pimp before we go?
No.
Cool. I think we did it. On that note, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
And I'm Megan, and he's sorry.
Let's see what you did there.